This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive. Mind, I don't want to hear you say, I don't want to hear you say, yeah. I don't want to hear you say, now you're messing with my
Warning. The following program contains subject matter that portrays gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered people as first-class citizens, deserving of an equal share of the American dream. Topics like this are known to piss off televangelists, backwater preachers, some talk show hosts, blue-haired biddies, several members of Congress, and other socially unacceptable outcasts like radical right-wing nut jobs. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
You have tuned into After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude, a continuing tradition here on KPFT 90.1 FM. The crew of After Hours is ready to bring you news, interviews, discussions, and music geared to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community and our allies. We are a diverse group here, but we all have one thing in common. We are out of the closet and urge everyone to come out of his or her closet as well. That means recognizing who you are, standing up for yourself and your rights, and being proud of who you are. We understand that this might not be possible due to age, job, or frame of mind, but remember, we are here especially for you. So kick back and relax and get ready for this week's edition of After Hours.
Houston, Galveston, and the world. Welcome to the Mother's Day edition of After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude. My name is Chris Harrison. I'll be your co-executive producer for this evening.
And I'm Wes Laverne, the intern. And we're missing Jimmy.
Jimmy is frolicking in the woods.
Again?
Yes, we have this alert here. PETA has set up a protest of Jimmy frolicking naked through the woods, fearing it would scare the wildlife and some of the plant life.
Well, you're going to burn for that one.
This is After Hours, as I said. It's Mother's Day.
Boy, you haven't opened like that in a while.
Yeah, I know. I had to take a deep breath. Well, you know, the swine flu was killing us all last week. I for some reason, it just hit me. I had to open like that.
There you go.
No, I'm feeling a little better today than I have the past couple weeks. I don't know why I've been up so damn early.
I don't know. Yeah. I'm feeling pretty good. I actually got a nap in before I came down tonight.
I got swimming in. That was about it. Yeah, I got kind of screwed over this weekend. See, this is the weekend where my mother's lies all fall apart.
Really?
Yeah. See, she continuously claims that she's a 21-year-old virgin. And so we had to get her, she had to admit it because, you know, today was her 60th birthday.
Uh-huh.
And tomorrow being Mother's Day. So she couldn't tell those lies anymore if she wanted presents.
Ah.
So we had to get her to admit it.
Oh, okay.
It was so sad taking her out to breakfast this morning at Denny's and watching both my parents order off the seniors menu.
You've been dreading that day, haven't you?
Well, it's 55, and I'm looking at it going, oh, God, how long do I got to live?
Not much longer, and I'm not far behind you.
And Jimmy tripped over that hill years ago.
Mm-hmm. I think Noah was still around back then.
Yeah, he knew a thing or two. Old man Noah. It is also, before we get into our calendar and our other stuff here, I want to remind people that this is a our pledge drive, and we would love for you to call in at 713-526-5738, 713-JAM-KPFT, or you can go over to kpft.org and place your pledge of support there. You know, I don't know if that thing is still on over on Clear Channel, that Queer Light program.
I have no idea.
I don't know. I turned on it there. It's hard to tell because, you know, I turned over to that Clear Channel station to listen to it, and since they don't play queer music, it was hard to tell whether or not there was a queer program or not on that. But if they do, you know, this is the kind of show that you're not going to hear over there. We've got coming up here tonight, Leather Ties. You're not going to hear that kind of stuff there. We had Teenagers on last week.
You're not going to hear that over there.
We don't know what we're doing next week, which is normal. You know,
well, Jimmy will be back.
The transgendered show, when they show, that's something that you don't get that kind of talk. And the music that you hear on here. So that's what we're here for, and we need you to call in your pledge of support so that management knows that, you know, we have listeners out there who aren't behind bars. We do love our MBBs out there, and we do love our straight alcoholic insomniac Republicans who listen in. You still have some cash left, I know. Madoff didn't take all of it.
Bug.
Oh. So, 713-526-5738, 713-JAM-KPFT. We're going to trust that you call in and let us know. Right now, we're going to do the calendar. Our quickie tonight is supposed to be Eresis, and I haven't seen a tiara yet. And our shorty is going to be Zine Fest, talking about an event coming up here next weekend. And then, of course, Leather Ties with Robert T. And if we got time here, some round table. And I've got an interesting story of a truly, truly sick and perverted Catholic priest sex scandal.
Uh-oh.
You have not heard a sex scandal like this.
Is it anything like the potato one?
No, that was an Episcopal vicar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember.
It's the Episcopal vicar who was making home fries. All that and more, along with a little bit of pitching. Maybe some catching, who knows? 713-526-5738, 713-JAM-KPFT. Let's go to the calendar.
All right. First on the list, May 16th is the HRC protest. will be protesting the HRC banquet at the Hilton Americas Hotel at the corner of Dallas and Crawford in downtown Houston on May 16th. Rendezvous at 5:30 until about 7:30.
You got a hell of a long rendezvous.
I'm telling you. You can contact Vanessa, 832-483-9901, or Moonflower, that's MOONFLOWRR, at AOL.com. Also,
is this better?
What do you mean, is that better?
I was just bleeding out of my eardrums.
Oh.
I may be old, but I ain't that deaf.
Well, turn down your headphones.
Well, I have to turn down both of ours. We're conjoined.
You got it.
Oh, I forgot about those.
Yes. There you go. Now, where was I? Oh, yeah. On Saturday, May 16th and Tuesday, May 19th at 7:30 p.m. at the Unity Church at 2929 Unity Drive in Houston, the Bio City Women's Chorus is presenting Africa, which will feature some of the greatest jazz and blues influences like Strange Fruit and Rock of My Soul.
Did you say bio? Bio?
Be quiet.
Bio. Don't you hate it when I'm on this side of the glass?
Yes, I do. Get back on the other side. Oh, wait a minute. We don't have a Jimmy in here, though. You're so...
It was crackling.
Yeah, because you kept messing with it. See, there you go again. You did it again. Anyway, moving on. Gay Men's Chorus of Florida on Saturday, June 13th at 7:30 p.m. at Jones Hall in the Theater District at 615 Louisiana is going to be presenting a world premiere event, the GMCH's 30th anniversary season with this one-of-a-kind concert. They're going to be doing Spanish Rose 20. Then on May 23rd, the date for the celebration of Whip Society's 11th annual anniversary at Tony's Corner Pockets. That's pretty much it on that. And then the Empire, the Royal Sovereign Empire, Imperial Court of the Single Star, Inc. Go ahead, I know you want to do it.
I don't care. If they show up, they can tell us where they're all at.
Okay. They're going to present another happy anniversary. Hosted by the Imperial Princess Royal Sherry Harrell. I think that's how you say that, right?
Imperial Princess Royale Sherry Harrell.
Okay, there we go.
Imperial Prince Susan Hayes.
And Count Doug Weiss on Friday, May 15th at 8:30 p.m. at Tony's Corner Pocket. And my tongue is all tied up today. I guess that's what I get for not exercising beforehand.
I did notice Sean wasn't here.
Oh. Sean's been sick all week.
Swine flu! Oh. Okay,
that's all I've got.
That's all you got?
That's all I got.
Our Bear Watch 10 starts next week. Starts Friday. Register today. There's still a few rooms left and a few massages left. You get all meals Friday night to Saturday brunch, a foam and pool party with a DJ, collectible souvenir shirt, Weeg and Guitar Hero raffle, hospitality suite and margarita machine, entire hotel reserved by Bear Watch, private dance party and groove. Bearwatch.net. This is for the Houston area Bears, and some of the proceeds goes to their charity, which is Hatch. Like I said, for more information, go to bearwatch.net. May is Mental Health Awareness Month. Please help erase the stigma. If we do that, the show may go away. One of the reasons we are extremely proud of the success of the first floor of the GLBT Cultural Center is that we hope it will bring members of the community to Montrose Counseling Center to find out about all the work that we're doing. Over time, it will lessen the stigma associated with receiving mental health care. As an organization that provides behavioral and mental health services, we know that word of mouth probably isn't the most way people hear about most of our programs. That's because a lot of people are ashamed to tell anyone they're struggling with depression or other issues. Well, if you listen to this show, you know we are not that kind of shy.
Far from.
Hell, we use this show as therapy sometimes.
Yeah.
Saves the sliding scale and We just tell you all of our problems. And if we don't tell you our problems, if you can't figure them out... The Hatch Prom flashback to the 80s. Well, speaking of mental problem. The 80s?
And that's when I grew up.
God. These kids weren't even...
They weren't around for the 80s.
Some of them might have been, you know.
The tail end.
Yeah. The 70s... Oh, God, that's reminded.
Imagine the hairdos.
Well, you know, they just... All you gotta do is look to a drag queen of now, and you'll find the hairdos of the 80s. Although,
and the clothing. Oh, God. I look at some of those pictures I had. What was I thinking?
Bonus points to anyone with a Flock of Seagulls haircut and real Vans. Flashback to the 80s at Hatch Prom on Friday, June 12th. The 17th annual Hatch Prom Flashback to the 80s will be held from 7 p.m. to midnight at the community room of the GLBT Cultural Center. The prom is free for all GLBT and questioning youth and their allies ages 13 to 20. Many don't attend their own high school dances because of fear of teasing or physical abuse, or they're just not allowed to take a person of the same gender with them. And you just don't feel like gathering together that little group of people. A special invitation is also extended to GLBT adults who may not have had the chance to attend their own high school prom, dress as they wish, or take who they want. Anyone 20 or older may attend for a $25 donation per person. If you're interested in sponsoring on this event, call 713-529-3590 or send an email to info@hatchyouth.org. You are not alone. Coming Out Support Group begins on Thursday, June 18th. Coming out is an ongoing process for anyone who identifies as gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender. Have you ever introduced your partner as your friend? Have you ever found yourself avoiding pronouns when you talk about love interest? Every day you are presented with choices on how open you will be with friends, family members, and coworkers. The Coming Out Support Group is open to all persons who identify as GLBT or questioning. Meetings are at the Cultural Center, first floor of MCC, at 401 Bernard, from 6 to 7:30 p.m. It's an 8-week period that will last from June 18th to August 6th. Participants may join at any time, and you need not to be a client of the Montrose Counseling Center to join. There is no fee to participate, but they will be accepting donations. Each session will be composed of an educational presentation on a specific topic, followed by an open, confidential discussion of that topic. Topics include coming out, homophobia and self-loathing, spirituality for GLBT persons, gay history, gay pride, coming out to others, coming out to family, coming out in the workplace, healing the hurt, prejudice, and discrimination, coming out a lifelong process, and healthy relations. Registration is requested but not required. For more information, call 713-529-0037 or go to montrosecounselingcenter.org. This page is blank.
No, it's that folded up one.
Do, 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 do,
it's
do,
your
do,
favorite
do,
one.
Do, do, do. Stage Door, Inc., Center for Performing Arts and Education, is presenting You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, based on the comic strip Peanuts. It is appearing this weekend, not next weekend, and then the rest through May, Friday, Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 3 p.m. For more information, go to stagedoorinc.com or call 832-582-7606. You'll also receive a $3 off your general admission ticket when you present non-perishable food items at the box office benefiting the Bridge in Pasadena. Well, theater news. Theater New West and the Holocaust Museum Houston proudly present The Timekeepers on April 23rd through May 23rd, Thursdays at 7:30 and Saturday performances at 8 p.m. There'll be a special Sunday performance on the 17th at 6 p.m. This takes place at the Holocaust Museum Houston, 5401 Caroline. Tickets are $20 with limited seating. Reservations can be made at 713-522-2204. For more information, you can go to www.hmh.org.
I think that's the same thing.
Yeah. Just in more depth.
All righty, then. And that's the calendar.
Gee. Did it in 20 minutes.
It's because we don't have Jimmy here.
Yeah, he holds us back, you know.
Well, it's not that. We don't have enough heckling material.
Oh, God, that sounds too much like Elmo.
Oh, jeez.
Tickle me, Elmo. Come on.
I can't believe you actually did the voice.
Yes, it's amazing. One of the few impersonations I can do is a tall black man doing a small child's voice.
for a red toy.
Mm-hmm. That was the scariest thing ever seeing when you watch on the PBS. It wasn't on PBS. I forget what special it was. They were showing the people who do the Sesame Street characters.
Really now?
And when you see Elmo, and it is this 6'2", 6'3", African-American man, bald, little bulky, and he stands up before you and he's talking, and all of a sudden he goes, "Hi, I'm Elmo." And it's like, what the? those words shouldn't be coming out of his mouth.
Holy. I can't believe that.
It's one of those strange things when you break the wall and you start seeing some of these characters. The behind the actor studio when they did The Simpsons.
Uh-huh.
And you sit there and you see the same person doing three or four different of the characters. And like, how in the world do you switch that mind?
Well, it's kind of like when they showed the people that do Family Guy.
Oh, yeah.
It was the same thing there.
But,
same person did, like, all the women's voices.
Yeah, they only have one woman. It's his sister.
I was like, wow.
Yeah, I thought it was his wife there, but then I saw it, and it was his sister. Unmarried bachelor, unmarried man at age 30-something, lots of money. He also does Stewie's voice.
Go figure on that one, huh?
I think he's a little too much stewing. let's see if I can come up and pull up the stuff so I know what I'm talking about with our guest here. Do we have anyone from the Empire of the Royal Sovereign Imperial Court of the Single Star Inc., Houston, Galveston, whatever rest?
Not yet. Where are they?
Leave it to
the drags to come in fashionably late.
No, they didn't show up last. They didn't show up last time, so... All right, let's,
What?
I don't know. Let's do a little music, and we'll bring in our guest here from Zine Fest.
All right, then. I got one.
All right.
When we first met, you had me catching sparks. We were leaving marks and doing it in trees and parks, or parked cars, or even at the back of dark bars, doing it all day like porn stars. I got my Mars and Leo, and you knew how to stroke my ego. We go down like when the needle hits the record. Let's reconnect and light it up with all due respect. I might just suggest that tonight it's not just sex, but the love you delight. In the beginning when we first met, we couldn't get enough of each other, rolling up a bed. Felt so comfortable, so natural. We went from Saturday to Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and by Wednesday we couldn't let go, didn't want to go. Reflecting on the memory has me yearning for what used to be. Remember when we first fell in love. Before I knew it, we were wrapped up, but love and like we didn't want some time. We're good as bump with no grind. We need to take the time. I reminisce on how we slowed down. I know you miss the way I used to take it downtown. I wanna hear the sounds. I can hear them. Reflecting on the memory has been yearning for what used to be. Remember when we first fell in love.
Yeah, girl. Remember how we used to do?
Yours and mine.
The moment I laid my eyes on you, my heart was set afire. Never knew the word was true until with you this new desire. Wanna provide for you and ride right through the night to new horizons. There's no disguising, none the wise and blindsided. Hindsight is 2020, tonight we getting plenty friendly. We don't know each other, you were dirty, you're so pretty. Getting dirty, wanna hurt me, play absurd, and say the word. At least a kiss, you twist your hips, a piece of this, that use your lips. Say, let's be lovers,
and who was that?
That was Joshua Kipp. We played him twice tonight so far. He was doing Butter on that one. The first
Isn't
one.
That Clip?
Say again?
Clip.
Oh, Clip. I'm sorry. Yeah. I forgot the L on there.
Yeah. Actually, that artist, one of the things when we say about this kind of performance, the artist that you hear on our show that you're not going to hear elsewhere, Joshua Kipp, I think, might actually have a video on Logo. But the thing about Joshua is a transgendered artist.
Really?
It's a post-operative. So I guess the name Clip in there means more than just a name.
So which way did he went? Male, female to male?
Yeah, FM.
Oh, okay. Very good voice.
Yeah, which is...
Yeah. Like I said, I played two of his songs tonight, and I was very impressed by the first one.
Yes, with the CD cover with the vulva hands on it.
Yeah, there you go.
We have in our...
I think that's your mic over there. Yeah, it's your mic. There you go.
I turned it the wrong way. I turn a lot of things the wrong way. Joining us in studio from ZineFest, we have Shane and Joe, right?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. I actually remembered something from half an hour ago.
Wow. Surprise. And you didn't have to have a drink.
That's the thing, is I didn't have a drink. That's scary. there's subtext out with this group. I'll have to explain later. Welcome to After Hours.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Don't have to be shy.
We don't bite unless you ask us to.
Oh, well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
The time to worry is when the whole gang is in there looking at you like you're,
Let's work something with Mike.
Yeah.
The
steak dinner that just washed ashore on a deserted island. So we're here to talk about ZineFest Houston 2009. First thing, and I have to ask this because when I told some people here on the show that we were getting going from here, what in the world is a zine?
Okay. Zine is an amateur magazine. Zine is short for magazine. It's usually photocopied or has a low circulation. And it can be about whatever you want it to be about. There's zines that I do that are what are called mini comics. Other people do zines that are more journalistic, or they're what are called perzines, which are it's perzine is a personal zine, like people write about their own lives, mm-hmm. similar to blogs. And there's zines on just about every topic. We'll have a lot of political zines represented. There will also be somebody there who does a zine on like for bike messengers, and so it's a variety of different topics that a zine could be about.
Well, I like the way you explain it. It's kind of like, in some ways, it's a old school blog that you still crank out on a copier or before that a mimeograph machine. You don't have to have a computer.
Right. You don't have to have a computer. You don't even have to have a typewriter. There's actually, I've seen handwritten zines.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Don't think I've ever seen a handwritten one.
Yeah.
So, now this, I mean, the zine art, I mean, I heard a lot of it years ago, and I think, in a way, the blogs kind of killed it a little bit. But is it, you see it's flourishing now still, or is it still, or is it, you know, coming back, or?
I would say that, the predictions that the internet was going to kill the zines have not proven true. And in fact, a lot of zinesters are able to find each other and find zine events because of the internet now. And there are actually people producing zines who were not even born when people first started predicting that the internet was going to kill the zines.
And oh, wow.
Yeah, I think it's the handmade quality of it that is so appealing to people that make them as well as collect them.
Right.
Yeah, because, I mean, it has that more personal touch. It's not like, you know, you go to a news rack and you pull down the mass-produced, you know, corporate magazine, or even, you know, something on the local level of, you know, the Houston Press or, you know, Public News or anything on those small, is even smaller level, and it's exactly what you want to get the word out about.
Right.
Right.
How do people go about starting something like this? If something they're interested in of wanting to put together a zine?
Basically, it's just a matter of just doing it. You decide what you want to do the zine about, and then you create the content, and then put it together, and then take it and get it photocopied, and then start showing it to your friends. And you don't have to worry about it being perfect, because you could always, next issue, do it better or do a reprint. And sometimes the rough quality, if it's not perfect, sometimes the rough quality is what makes the zine appealing sometimes.
Yeah. So what all is happening with Zine Fest?
It's going to be May 16th at the Caroline Collective on 4820 Caroline, and from 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. And it's there are going to be a lot of people who publish zines who will be showing their zines. We're expecting about 30, at least 30 different zine producers and distros, which are, a distro is somebody who is representing several people's zines. And we'll also have, there'll be workshops and discussions. I'll be leading a discussion about locally published zines. Mm-hmm. There will also be Thorn Dreyer and Sherrod Bishop, who started Space City News, which was the first alternative newspaper in Houston, are going to be there. Okay. And they will be doing a question and answer, talking about the late 60s, early 70s, radicalism, and the underground press in general.
Yeah, that's kind of how I got involved, because a lot of the people who do zines also do alternative press that kind of go back and forth, and that's what I know more about. I had to learn words like distro and all these things, because they would talk, and I'd be, blah, 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 and I'd be like, what? But it's really exciting that we have Thorn coming, because, I mean, the Space City News office was actually, like, bombed by the Klan and things. I mean, they were real serious about.
Oh, this station can relate to that.
Yes, yeah. It was around the same time that KPFT was bombed, too, yeah.
I think Thorn also did a program for KPFT.
Yes, he did.
Coincidence? Yeah. Read the zine.
And, we'll also have there'll be a workshop on writing for alternative media. And there'll be another workshop on making handmade books from everyday objects. Mm-hmm. And in this case, the objects will be cereal boxes.
Yeah, Lee Steiner teaches classes at the Museum of Printing History, and she's going to do that for us.
And there will also be music, and there'll be some zine readings, people reading from their zines, and an open mic. And mm-hmm. And a display of locally published zines.
Yep, and some alternative press there too thrown in. some covers of Space City News and pictures taken from back in the 70s.
Now, is this just for, you're going to see this on a local scene, or is it a more, you know, regional, statewide, or, you know, you're getting people from all around?
We're getting, the majority of the people represented are from Houston. We got a few people from Austin, and people as far away as Sacramento. I think the person, Heather Rector, who does a zine called Dreams of Donuts, which is a comic about her personal life, and she travels a lot, and I think she may actually be hitchhiking from Sacramento to get here.
Holy cow. Wow.
But like I said, we're not talking about, you know, the standard corporate type of production, so it's not going to be the standard corporate type of personnel you have in here. It's more of the alternative, because you're letting someone's pouring out their heart and their opinion on to this of what they want to get the word out on people.
And it's very attractive to people like me. I'm kind of a public historian, and thinking 50 years from now, somebody coming across a cache of these sorts of things is going to be delighted, because it's a whole different experience that's talked about than what you see in the mainstream.
And it's that permanence of having something on paper. You know, I work in the printing industry.
Exactly.
And it's one of those things, you do hear every once in a while saying, you know, the internet's going to kill this, the internet's going to destroy this.
Yeah, it's not.
But there's still that need for somebody to hold it in your hand and to be a part of it, because it's more of a permanence, you know. You can put something out up on a blog, but, you know, you can go copy and paste and change the stuff and do it easily, and, you know, reality is changed from, can be changed from day to day. But that piece of paper that you put your heart into of sitting at a word processor or a typewriter or block letters with a pen and paper, it's something a little deeper. It's a little something that's not...
Yeah. And not everybody has the internet.
Right? Yeah.
A lot of people tend to forget that.
Right.
You know, it's something you can take with you on the, traveling, and I have to keep looking for a Wi-Fi spot,
right. Yeah, and when I first started discovering zines, I think the randomness of the places I would find the zines kind of made it appealing.
Yeah.
I mean, you might find them like on a rack of flyers somewhere, or at a coffee shop, and it's the fact that there may have only been a dozen copies of this printed, and one of them found its way to you. And I actually had at one of the old Westheimer Street Festivals, there was a zine I got. Somebody was handing out. It was a copy that hadn't been stapled, and it was accidentally printed on 3-hole punch paper, and it's like one of my favorite like treasures in my collection.
And you never know what somebody starts off as a zine, how far it can go on.
True.
And so you're talking about what could possibly be a first edition.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about it in those terms, that, you know, what the first part that came out that may have been the inspiration that moved them on to, you know, books of poetry or, you know, novels, or who knows, one of these things, you know, maybe you see a zine turned into a movie. I mean, they're taking comic books all the time now, turning them into movies.
That's true.
What's not to say that someone's life you see in a zine is up for, you know, Academy Award for short documentary or the big prize. You know, you never know where, and that's a humble start of someone sitting down in a copy shop, putting it down on paper and, you know, dropping it off at a coffee house. You know, it's something, you never know where that written word is going to take you.
Right. And there is, in this month's Outsmart, a story about, what is it, 4 people that are going to be at Zine Fest?
There's, in the current issue of Outsmart, there's an article about 4 Texas cartoonists, including one of them's me. And
amazingly, one of them is Shane.
Yeah. And there's also Dylan Edwards is another one of the cartoonists profiled, and he is confirmed is going to be at Zine Fest.
He's a trans man, right?
No. He has one of his comics is about transgenders. And And there's two other cartoonists in the article at Outsmart, and then there's a sidebar about Zine Fest Houston.
Oh, okay, cool.
As far as GLBT zinesters at the festival, there's I'll be there. Dylan Edwards will be there, as I mentioned, and there's Darla Lathan, a transgendered woman who does mini comics, usually shows up at the Zine Fest, and then Damien, who does a zine that I can't mention the title of on the air.
One of those words.
Has been to a lot of zine festivals in the past. He's a transgender man who does a zine that's on feminist and transgender issues.
Right. And I came across that the same way we were talking about one of those treasures. I was just like, yeah. Oh my God, look at this!
Yeah.
Wow. Never expected to find us laying around at half
price. Yeah, like I said, it's a zine we can't mention. That zine is a zine we can't mention the name of on the air, but the initials are PC.
Ooh, peace.
Don't go there.
I should have asked that beforehand. Yeah. I could tell you what we could say.
Yeah, and Darla's. Comics are also are very interesting as well. When I first met her, she was Daryl, and her comics kind of touch every letter of the GLBT alphabet, they're some pretty extreme comics that she does, let's see, who else?
I'm not really familiar with a lot of the zinesters.
Yeah.
But you're going to see a good cross-section. Some of the people who have been there since the beginning, some of the people who have been there, for quite a while, to the new beginner who just...
Yeah. And this year's Zine Festival, we have people who are just starting out doing zines, and we have people who have been doing zines for more than, like, a decade or more. Or in the case of Thorn Dreyer, somebody who was doing an underground newspaper in the 60s.
With, fabulous hand-drawn art is just, great.
Okay. So, once again, it's the Zine Fest Houston, Saturday, May 16th from 2 to 10, over at the Caroline Collective, 4820 Caroline Street. And you're at what? Zinefesthouston.org is the website?
Or you just want to go to WordPress? Yeah, you can get there from going to zinefesthouston.org, or you can go to www.zinefesthouston.wordpress.com. But probably zinefesthouston.org is probably easier to remember, and that'll direct you.
Mm-hmm. I had to click the link Jimmy sent me. All right. Thank you. Is there any admission fee for this?
It is a free admission.
Okay. I just want to make sure I threw that out so people know that.
Yeah.
So join them over at Zine Fest Houston next Saturday.
Thank you.
Thank you all for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Put a little music, then coming up in a little bit, Leather Ties.
Somebody, but it's a temporary game to tide you over.
and weak. But all in love is fair. I turn you the cheek, and I feel the slap and the sting of the foul night air. And I know you're only human, and I haven't got talking room. But tonight, while I'm making excuses, some other woman is making love to you. Somebody bring me some water. Can't you see I'm burning alive? Can't you see my lady's got another lover? I don't know how I'm gonna survive. Somebody bring me some water. Can't you see it's out of control? Baby's got my heart and my baby's got my mind. Will this night be through? Wanna hear the breaking glass? I wanna feel the steel of the red hot truth. And I'd do anything to get it out of my mind. I need some insanity of that temporary kind. Tell me, how will I ever be the same when I know that that woman is whispering your name?
I said before we didn't play Melissa, and you played Melissa.
I had to.
But we played an old Melissa.
Yeah, it was old Melissa.
This is back when she was closeted and scared and had feathered hair.
And she had feathered hair in this picture, too.
That's what I'm saying. It's old. It's old school Melissa.
Yep.
You know, this is the type of show, music that you hear here on After Hours. Before that was Pansy Division.
Yep.
Doing
Boyfriend Wanted.
They, Pansy Division, queer core band. They got a little bit of a push there several years ago when they started opening for Green Day in their concerts. So, did you remember Green Day? And strangely enough, Pansy Division is still around. Green Day, where are they at? You're listening to After Hours, and we are in our pledge drive. And we need you to call in your pledge of support, 713-526-5738, 713-JAM-KPFT. And, or you can go to kpft.org and place your pledge of support there. Why should you do that?
So you can get programming like us?
Because, you know, I double-checked there. That Radio for a Twist, they go bye-bye.
Really?
They went away. They may come back later this year.
Really? No.
But, and you know, I listened to it a couple of times, and you know, they had their three hosts, you know, had great, great communication and banter, and but you know, you listen, you look at the music list that they play, and you know, it was Madonna and Cher and, you know, Kylie Minogue, and
you can get that anywhere.
You can get that, yeah. And what we give you is a slice of gay life, unfiltered, censored as little as possible. But we give you a way of looking at the community at large that you're not going to find elsewhere. You know, our sister program, Queer Voices, Monday nights from 9 to 11, if I'm remembering the times correctly. They give you a little more, can't say straight lace for a show on Queer Voices. They're more like the old-fashioned Nightline. They give you the news, they give you the stories, they give you the big events. We're the Daily Show. We give you the humor behind it. We give you some different stories behind it and a different perspective. And we let the community come in that you don't hear. You don't, you're not going to hear from the leather BDSM community on other programs, other stations. The transgenders, the youth groups.
Not going to hear from some of the community theater groups community, that we bring in.
Yeah, the community theater groups. You know, we're working to try and get back some more women's voices here on the show. We're trying to get in voices of color. You know, we're three white guys here. We can't tell you exactly what you're going, you know, what's going on in the African American lesbian scene out there. We're not even going to try. You know, I'm not going to tell you what's going on in the leather scene. That's why we bring in Daddy Bear Tea. So that's what we're trying to do, is put it together. So it's 713-526-5738, 713-JAM-KPFT, or go to kpft.org and, like I said, place your pledge of support there for After Hours.
Yeah, let us know how much you enjoy our show.
And, you know, it's just, you know, the talk nowadays is all about the economy. You've got a station here with very modest budget. We probably have, of the five Pacifica stations, we probably have the smallest paid staff. When your pledge support comes in, there's only, if there's 10 people on paid staff here, I'd be surprised. But the rest of us are complete volunteers. You know, I come in from Willowbrook.
I come in from West, just north of Greens Point.
Comes in from there. You know, Jimmy's in the Montrose. The Heights, you know, we come in from all different directions to give you this slice of life. And so we need to know that you're out there. You know, we don't subscribe to Arbitron. And, you know, unless one of the stations, other stations, throws it in the dumpster and someone goes diving for it, we don't know what the numbers are. But we want you to let us know that you're out there, you're listening. 713-526-5738, 713-JAM-KPFT. A couple of ways you can do it, the kind of promotions that we like to do special here. There's the cocktails for KPFT. Give your liver a break and give up one cocktail a month for us. That's a $5 pledge. That comes to $60 a year. No. Yeah.
Yeah, $60.
Yeah, usually there's a map, a thing up here that tells me that. $60 a year. You can put that on your credit card, and that will be an automatic draft you can take out, so that you can give that pledge of support here to KPFT. And the other one that I like, that we actually had some takers on our last pledge drive, it's the Queer is a $3 bill.
Alligator.
It is a $36 pledge per year. Give $3 a month here to KPFT and let them know that queers are listening to KPFT.
Queers?
Yes. So call in, a pledge of support, $3 a month. Queer is a $3 bill. For $36 a year for KPFT, or, you know, the $5 cocktail for KPFT, we've got little gifts for you to entice you if that is what you would like. And so, once again, 713-526-5738, 713-JAM-KPFT, or kpft.org. Let's go a little bit of music, and we're going to be coming in with Leather Ties. We'll be right back. You are listening to After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude on listener-sponsored commercial-free Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast, KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 Galveston, and always the World Wide Web at kpft.org. It's now time for Leather Ties.
Hello, how are you, Chris?
Oh, wonderful.
Wes.
I'm weird.
How are you doing?
It's weird. I feel like I'm in professional mode right now. I think Jimmy's holding me back.
Yeah, I think that's it. We don't have Jimmy here to just, like, totally drive us all crazy and off the wall.
Well, like I said at the beginning of the show, we don't have our heckle material.
Yeah, we don't have our heckler here. Where's Jimmy? He's at the camp out, isn't he?
Yep.
No, he's the material. He's the heckler.
How many people do you know of who can be conspicuous in their absence?
That would be Jimmy.
The lady in pink.
Virgin. Lady in pink, yes.
Virgin. That's
it. Oh, turn on mic one.
Oh.
Good evening. Welcome to Leather Ties. I'm Daddy Bear Robert. I'm here with Master Buzz, my co-host. Baby Bear is here tonight. He's in a mood, so look out. He was doing some really nasty, funky things while that music was going.
Really now? And I missed it all?
Yeah, I'm sorry. He's stuck over in the corner. So
yeah, I noticed that. That's why I missed it all.
He was doing some really good tricks with his tongue. You should have seen that.
That's why we stuck him back in the corner.
That's why I married him.
I can't believe I missed that.
Well, not technically married. You can't do that here yet. We'll have to move to Iowa and become corn huskers.
Or Maine.
Don't bring up cornholing.
I said corn husking.
We got a whole hour out of that one time.
No, we're not going to go there again. That last song, that was one off of, by George Michael. It's called Fantasy. It was a flip side to his single, the single release of Freedom. I didn't like the song Freedom, but the song Fantasy was pretty nasty and fun, so that's why I brought that. Tonight, for music, I've chosen Funky Fags for the theme. So all the music is going to be gay artists, and it's all going to be funky, weird stuff. So we'll enjoy that. Well, I will. Y'all may not, but, you know.
That's all that matters.
Yeah, that's all that matters, isn't it? Yes. Master Buzz tonight has chosen the topic, and I'm going to turn it over to him, and then I'm just going to play naive and interject obnoxious questions throughout the evening.
You mean devil's advocate.
Okay, devil's advocate.
I'm going to do obnoxious.
Okay,
I'll play the religious right.
The topic that I've chosen for tonight is kink and leather, the differences and similarities, because we know that there are both. There are similarities, and there are some very distinct differences. This is a point that is argued relatively often in outer culture, and I'd like to address that tonight, and I'm hoping that those of you who are listening will be offended, or not.
Will be offended, yes. He's hoping for the offense, yes.
Or not. What I have to say on the subject is my own personal opinion based on things that I've learned in my own journey. If your journey is a little different and you have a different take on it, that's fine. We are all on our own personal journey, and basically my take on, I've been asked several times, what is leather? And that there really is no way to define it succinctly except to say that leather is a journey into yourself. That said, I'd like to read from something that I wrote and failed to distribute widely. I called it Twisted Tines. Somewhere along the way, it was decided that several paths should come together, and in making this happen, roads which should have remained separate developed an inappropriate reverse fork. The tines were twisted together unnaturally, and the result has been disastrous for them all. Looking, along with cultural anthropologists, at human history, there are many instances within the caste system of tribes who share cultural similarity benefiting from the sharing of resources without fully blending the tribes. Arranged marriages aimed at sharing such things as access to water, hunting grounds, and even the politics of blurring tribal boundaries for the welfare of neighboring tribes were commonplace. We can also see and cite examples of whole tribes being swallowed up culturally in tribal wars aimed at consuming, not sharing, tribal lands and resources. Such brutal and bloody struggles wiped out entire cultures, leaving little behind by which to identify their existence, much less their customs. This brand of cultural destruction is happening in the 21st century right before our eyes. Three separate but similar subcultures are opting to dismiss their own respective customs, seemingly in which the accomplishing of the task destroys the individual value of each. The three subcultures involved are those of leather, kink, and fetish. Discovering and declaring the value of each of these cultures separately, one has to look into the history and historic evolution of each. If an evolutionary mistake is being made, the means by which it is being made and the inherent damage this mistake can and will cause has to be examined. Looking at these things can be somewhat painful, but it is time to take the rose-colored glasses off nonetheless. Defining cultures, how do you draw the boundaries? Webster's New World Dictionary defines culture in this context as follows. Culture, the skills, art, etc., of a given people in a given period, civilization. The implication of this definition is plain. A culture is defined by its members. It finds definition in its own birth and evolution. Included in the definition of culture are the customs, rituals, art, skill, and political history of its people. While a culture may neighbor another in similarity, each culture is individual and sovereign to the members thereof. Failing in the defense of such sovereignty, a culture relegates itself to obscurity, if not extinction.
So what are you saying, that the three are blending together to where it's all going to become extinct?
The lines are being blurred in such a way that leather culture is losing its identity. Kink culture is blurring its own identity by... It's okay, let me put it a little differently here, approach this from a different angle. When you see a person dressed in leather, do you think this is a leather person or this is a kink person?
It depends on how they look.
Well, I think it depends on how they look, but it also depends on the venue in which you see them.
Thereby, you see the blurring of the cultures.
Right.
Because originally, you see somebody dressed in leather, say, even as late as the early 90s, you saw somebody dressed in leather. It was generally a man, and he was gay.
And
because
it was
leather culture was gay male.
Right.
Kink culture existed at the time, but you didn't see a lot of them dressed in leather. They dressed in fetish outfits when they went to events and the like, but you saw very few of them actually dressed in leather. People who dressed in leather who were part of the kink culture at the time were leather fetish kink folk. They were kinky people with a fetish for leather. Leather as a culture began with gay men.
Yeah.
And was exclusive to gay men.
Right. We've said this over and over and over.
And over and over and over, I get people saying, you're lying. That's not true. That's not true.
Okay. One thing I do want to say about this. Yes, the leather culture, the leather subculture came into being with gay men. And during Spring Iniquity, the leather conference here that was a couple of weeks ago, there was actually even a heterosexual presenter presenting leather history. And even he said the leather culture and the leather world in which we have come into was created and was given birth to by gay men after the World War.
Yes.
And, I mean, so those that actually take the time to educate themselves, yes, even the straights agree, well, a lot of them that actually know what they're talking about, do understand that the leather culture, I don't want to say lifestyle because it's not a lifestyle, it's a life. It is a way of life. It's
yes,
not a lifestyle.
And let's talk about the organization that actually presented the conference. National Leather Association Houston presented the conference recently, and from what I understand, it was a very successful conference, and everyone had a really great time. But let's talk about the membership of NLA.
Okay, wait. I want to see this. I'm reading something off of Wikipedia here. It says, gay male leather culture has existed since the late 40s, when it likely grew out of post-World War II. No, it didn't likely grow out of. That's exactly where it came from.
It was the motorcycle soldiers coming back from World War II that formed motorcycle gangs. Heterosexuals became bikers.
Right.
The gay motorcycle soldiers formed motorcycle groups, and they didn't necessarily call themselves bikers. They called themselves leathermen.
And the whole thing, the whole cute joke with that is, basically, they created these motorcycle clubs, these gay men, and they would go out on the road
And they go out in the woods and they would boff because there was no place to do it.
But even then,
they didn't have gay bars like we have now. They didn't have any of that. So they created their own culture where they could
boff,
enjoy masculinity. And that's what it was about, was enjoying their own masculinity.
And
well, I can't
even
say
then,
it.
Even then, even in the division between the heterosexual males and the homosexual males who came back from World War II as motorcycle soldiers, forming these groups, the formation of those groups had nothing whatsoever to do with sex or the practice thereof. It had nothing to do with their kinky fetishes, their kink. It was all about the brotherhood that they shared and wanted to continue to share.
And the military
the militaristic protocols. Bikers still, to this day, practice very rigid protocols. They don't sound military. They don't call people generals and lieutenants and sergeants and all of that. But there is a definite militaristic atmosphere.
Well, to be honest, a lot of the biker clubs, gay or straight, do actually have a sergeant at arms and things like this. So yes, they do still
the organizations, right?
The they do actually still adopt a lot of these terms.
Getting back to where I was, I have in my hand a copy of SM101 by Jay Wiseman, and I was talking about NLA.
Oh yeah, and speaking of NLA and Spring Iniquity.
Yeah, not just NLA Houston. I'm talking about NLA
International.
The majority now of the members of National Leather Association are heterosexual or bisexual, strongly heterosexual leaning.
We'll just say pansexual.
Pansexual, which is a term that didn't exist until six years ago. No. I actually looked it up in some periodicals that are older than that. But it didn't come into wide use until after the advent of political correctness.
Ah.
Even groups that are strongly pansexual and have been since their inception still are reluctant to include homosexual men.
Yeah. So anyway,
that being said, the history of NLA as a group, National Leather Association,
and there has been some debate on this.
National Leather Association was founded in Portland, Oregon, sometime in the late 70s, early 80s. I have in my hand a copy of SM101 by Jay Wiseman, and in his references, he refers to SM clubs. And for those of you who have this edition, the 1996 edition, it is on page 365. It says, National Club Chapters in Many Cities, National Leather Association, and in parentheses, Jay put in pansexual but primarily gay and lesbian. Now, even still in the early 90s, National Leather Association was a primarily gay organization. It is no longer. And many such groups...
It's pretty much 50-50 now.
Not in my experience.
It wasn't just gay, though. It was gay male.
It was,
Well, it was formed by gay men.
That's right. What I'm saying. It.
The reason that it had to be listed as pansexual, and trust me, I was around at this time, and I just happened to be from the Northwest. The reason that it had to be listed as pansexual is because, at the time, we had affirmative action, and if you wanted to be a not-for-profit organization, you had to have non-discrimination clause
in
your bylaws. It had to be inclusive, so they had to put the wording in. And because of that wording, a gay male organization became a pansexual organization and open to, again, what I'm calling the blurring of the boundaries. National Leather Association was not intended to be a kink organization. It was intended to be a leather organization. Unfortunately, leather culture has failed in defending the definition of their culture, and the culture itself is all but gone, all but lost. And in adopting leather into kink, kink is losing its separate identity. Now, I have no problem with kink people. I know some really kinky people.
Yeah, heterosexual, I'm one of them.
Heterosexual, bisexual, pansexual. I have no problem with kinky people. I love kinky people. Kinky people have a great sense of humor. The problem that I have with this is that people are assuming that if you're leather, you're kinky, or if you're kinky, you're leather, because the two different cultures are blurring their own boundaries, the boundaries, the definitions of their own culture. The skills, art, etc. of a given people are being lost, whitewashed in between so that one is indistinguishable from the other. I think that there is value in both communities. Both cultures have a distinct value and something to offer to the population at large, but are denying themselves that benefit by pretending to be something they are not.
Well, would you say pretending, or... I don't know if I would say pretending. I would say that they are... They may be emulating certain aspects of the other
culture.
For
what purpose?
Because they find it attractive for some reason or another.
And do leather men simply wear leather because they find it attractive?
Some people who call themselves leather do.
Right. I call that costume leather.
But again,
that's
to me...
drag.
Well, no.
Right?
Well, to me, it drag, but I mean, that's the same thing as kink or fetish. It is a fetish for them. They don't necessarily subscribe right. to leather protocols and a leather life.
Or leather as a culture.
But to me, then, you should say that you're a fetishist, and you're, one of your fetishes is leather.
That's
just
what,
like...
That's what Buzz is
well,
saying,
one of,
though.
Right. But one of the best examples I could give is the Lone Star Rubber Corps. That is a they are fetishists about rubber and rubber gear,
right? And that is right. a fetish.
That is a fetish.
Right, but they
that's
don't
a separate culture.
But that's what I'm saying. That is a fetish. That is their own personal kink. When they play in rubber gear. So hey. To me, that falls into both fetish and kink. But they don't try to pass themselves off as leather.
So that we
they
don't
are actually offended if you if you lump them in with leather. They say, no, we are rubber. So
I think I can address this if you'll give me just a moment here. I will read what I've written about fetishism as a culture so that we don't get fetishists caught in the middle of this. Because unfortunately, quite often they are.
Yeah, they are. And that's one thing I find is that, again, like you say, the blurring of lines. Where do you know who to call? Or I mean, we're just talking about labels here.
And
but
if we want to talk about the difficulty and the struggle between leather and kink, let's talk about the difficulties that fetish people have, and you'll find that in what I've written. Inasmuch as a fetish is defined as a sexual stimulation by objects or materials not otherwise sexual in nature, the range of objects and materials coupled with the number of people likely to be sexually stimulated by any one object or material make it difficult to define fetishism as a culture. Each object or material which becomes a fetish for certain individuals may draw such individuals as have similar fetish interests together in order to share the fetish, yet the practice of fetishism itself does not seem to draw a larger collective interest, leaving fetishism without a collective culture, per se. Mutable materials, such as leather or rubber, as well as many others, can be molded, mended, or altered in order to create objects of a sexual nature, and as a result, these materials and their related worshippers are increased in number. In gathering together to share innovations, these focused fetishists form collectives. Still, the focus involved prevents the practice of fetishism in and of itself from becoming a collective culture. Finding refuge within established cultures of leather or kink, but only within the guidelines of each established culture, each collective of such fetishists relies on adherence to those guidelines in establishing a sub-subculture rather than a separate collective culture. Considered by established cultures to be oddities, sometimes happily, oft merely tolerated, fetishists remain on the fringe without a collective separate identity. Participation in such things as bondage, discipline, sadism, or masochism may be practiced by fetishism in addition to or in conjunction with their particular fetish, but are often without relation or regard to the fetish itself. Relationships may form between fetishists based on the sharing of the fetish and may or may not be dominant and submissive by definition. Fetishists individually may be drawn to militaristic social structure without the same having anything to do with their particular fetish. Fetishists may be male, female, or hermaphrodite, homosexual, bisexual, or heterosexual. With the amorphous nature of fetishism, it is no wonder that fetishists brave enough to seek social expression of their nature are swallowed up by established subcultures only to be relegated to accepting honorary or symbolic participation. I think that sort of clears it up.
That's a good one, actually, yeah.
Well, I see. I think that's where organizations are having problems is that people don't have a group to identify with, so they go into that one group.
Well, they go they go out looking and seeking for like-minded people, and they find something that's kind of close.
Similar, right.
Or something that looks like what they might be getting into, and when they're swallowed up by it, only to realize that that really wasn't what they were after.
Right.
And they end up falling by the wayside, thinking one thing, being told another, and then shoved, having something else completely different shoved in their faces, and they end up confused and wandering away, scratching their heads. No, they're not being served. This is why it's important in my mind, and again, I've said this at the beginning, and I'll say it again. These are my opinions, and these are based on my personal journey and my experiences out in the community. Not everybody's going to agree with me, and in fact, many have not. And that, in itself, does not bother me.
Well, I think also the era that you and I came into leather, it was very different from how it is now.
I could be with other gay men who celebrated being men and be protected in that without it having to do with excluding anybody obnoxiously. The culture supported and defended itself as a natural part of its own focus. It was gay, leather, men.
Well, I find the issue that I have right now is that even within the leather culture in which we live, people, and I guess it's just human nature, they automatically segregate themselves into little cliques. And if you don't fit the criteria of that clique, if you're not cute enough, you're not wearing the right leather, or the best leather, or the newest leather, then you're not going to be a part of our little clique. And the cliquish mentality has really taken over, I think, in a lot of ways. And that kind of puts off people that are attracted to the lifestyle and want to learn more, but they're being snubbed because they don't have the right leather gear. And but to me, leather is, when I think of a leather life in my journey, it's not about the clothes on your back. But for so many people now, that's what it's become. It's just become a fetish statement, and I think that ties into the lines just blurring.
I don't know how far I can go here without breaking some of the ancient taboos. We're discussing what the rules and tomes of our culture are, because, frankly, we're not supposed to discuss these things outside of culture. These are things that we kept. We were a secret culture.
Well,
we were visible when we were out of closed doors, but when we were in our own spaces, let's say our leather bars, when we were inside those bars, we were a separate, secret society. And the rules that we were governed by were shared person to person. We were mentored.
It was word of mouth, yes.
The leather gear that we wear, we earned. Every piece of leather was presented to us, and it started with the clothing, yes, but as the accoutrement, as I like to put it, as we collected that, we collected it because it was given to us, it was presented to us for our interest and mastery of that particular item. It wasn't something that we just went out and purchased willy-nilly because it was pretty.
But somebody had to start with the leather. Okay, yeah. you can't just, everybody has to be given their leather. There are people that have to start themselves into it also.
Well,
but
there's
still that click, though, of, well, you're not wearing the right color vest, or you're not wearing the right exact cap that you're supposed to wear.
There were rules there, too.
I know there were rules. But I can honestly remember
back in the 80s, somebody was at, a sub was absolutely thrilled that they got a leather belt.
Mm-hmm. A leather harness.
Wait. Let Clayton finish what he was saying.
What I'm saying is there are people that are so staunch in what they see somebody wearing when there are a lot of people that are coming out into this culture now and are trying to find their way in it,
mm-hmm.
and they will sit there and make a judgment about them because they're wearing the wrong cap.
Right.
Okay, I have an issue with that.
Well, I think...
You know, if I wear a baseball cap that's leather, that doesn't mean I'm a boy.
No, but I also think that...
In true leather culture, yes, it does.
But I'm not.
But
well, then don't wear it.
I can wear it if I want to.
You wear it into a leather bar and you're going to be called a boy. Because that is a boy cap.
That's where I have an issue.
There, okay, it's just like going to a black tie dinner and not wearing a tuxedo when tuxedo is required.
Okay, well, the leather culture is changing.
I know that.
And people are growing into it. And if people don't, if people aren't given it, wait a second.
Change or go away is what you're saying.
No, what I'm saying is there's so many people that don't allow people to grow in it. It is supposed to be a growing experience. It's not supposed to be a thing where you do this or that's it.
You know how I grew into it? I walked into a leather bar wearing tennis shoes. I was told to leave and return when I was properly attired. The only thing that I was wearing that did not fit the code that was clearly posted at the door were my tennis shoes. Because it said, no tennis shoes allowed. You must be wearing leather shoes or boots.
So you had to buy your leather.
I had to buy a pair of leather shoes. That was the last piece of leather that I was permitted to buy for myself, as I learned after I bought them and went back in. Someone saw that I had taken an interest, took me under wing, and said, okay, you're curious about this.
But again, in this day and age, though, especially the way that groups form and little cliques form, you want to be accepted into a group, you're going to go buy what they're wearing. So it's kind of a catch-22.
It is.
And then when somebody tells you that that really is an inappropriate thing for you to be wearing at this time...
Now, see, I can understand that when it comes to an actual cover, like a dom cap, a master's cap, or a boy cap or something like that. But especially all the clubs, and I mean, even the cowboy clubs, even the drag clubs, they have leather vests that they put their colors on.
Right.
So that line has blurred. But it has become a catch-22, because if you walk into a leather bar and you're not wearing leather, you're going to be ostracized. And
so how can you expect
people
to grow
into the
culture?
Well, the only way that they're going to accept me is if I go out and buy some stuff. So it really is a catch-22, because they're not learning and nobody's teaching them.
I've been given very little leather in my entire life. 99% of it I've had to buy.
And actually, people are coming into leather and deciding their own roles and deciding what they're going to wear. And I've actually had a woman wearing a master's cover that I had not spoken to but maybe once before walked up to me in a men's leather bar. I was in full leather with my master's cover on, walked directly up, looked right in my face, and said, nobody here believes you're leather. No one has seen you play.
Mm.
People, leather and kink are second cousins. They are not twins. Not all leather people are kink. Not all kinky people are leather. Not all people are exhibitionists. The fact that you may be hung up or obsessed with my dick doesn't mean I'm going to show it to you.
Penis.
And the fact that I don't show it to you does not make me less of a person.
And just because you have not seen me play in public, that's...
don't play in public. Very rarely.
To me, play is something that's done at home in private or in a controlled environment, not in a bar.
Well, it depends
now,
on
granted,
what play
I
is.
Have, but again, yeah, I have flogged somebody.
As have I.
Quite a few people in the bar.
So have I.
But
I've done electrical play in the bar.
But when it comes to play, no, I don't go to play parties. I don't go to dungeon parties. That is not a scene that attracts me. I can, if I know somebody there and they're doing a scene I'm interested in, like fire play or something like that, I will go, I will observe, I will enjoy. But I'm not there to play or hook up.
Well, but playing doesn't mean hooking up, though, either.
But for a lot of people, that is.
Yes.
It is that way. But
to define where the role is going and to define where I'm at is I'm not going to go to a play party or a dungeon party and screw everything that moves there. I'm not going there to look for something to screw later. I'm going there to observe, learn, maybe flog, maybe set somebody on fire, you know, have some fun, and then go home with my partner and he and I can finish whatever
I was going to say,
mood we are in.
Are you going to let me flog you all the time?
You haven't. When you learn, I would let you.
All the time, so I can practice and keep up with it?
That's what the mannequin is for.
Exactly. That's why you can go to a dungeon party. You can go to a dungeon party to learn those things.
To learn the technique.
And to practice.
I would not, well, me personally, I never practiced on a human being until I was comfortable
enough. To keep your skills up.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's what I'm talking about practicing. Yeah. I'm not talking about practicing something new that you haven't done.
Right.
I'm talking about practicing something that you've experienced.
But again, to me, that is something that's totally separate from leather. That is fetish. That is kink play.
Right.
But it's not
leather. And there's a difference between sex and there's a difference between play. But, and some people interpret play as...
But that is our definition.
The reason for play is sexual stimulation.
Right.
Let's not paint this another color.
No.
The reason for all of these kinky types of play is for sexual stimulation. It is... Kink is about sex.
Oh, yeah.
Leather is not necessarily about sex. That's what I'm trying to get across.
Okay, wait.
The fact that I'm wearing leather does not mean that I'm ready to have sex with anything and everyone that walks up and says, I wanna. When I'm wearing my leather, I am a leather man, not a sex object. If you want to have sex with me, walk up and say you'd like to have sex with me. Don't demand it simply because you see what I'm wearing.
What was that song by Kraftwerk? I don't want to be your sex object.
I know you didn't say that, but that's what is happening in our culture right now. They see somebody wearing leather, and automatically that person is labeled a sex pig. Yep. I am not a sex pig. I'm a leather man. Whoa. There's a big, huge difference.
I agree with you.
That's the point that I was getting to. Another thing is our boys, our slaves. The collar they wear is not an invitation to paw at them or to demand sex from them.
Or assume that since they are a sub, they're yours too.
Exactly.
Order around. Let's go back on this. Let's take a music break and play some funky fag music, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about this.
Yeah, and
play
have a
double dose of Jason Walker. We're going to be listening to Jason Walker, and it's two cuts off of his new album.
Here we go, for real. She's James Bond in a dress. Diamonds forever, all she wears. Loaded and ready to go. Array the concert, diva desire. He's Bondina in a suit. Walking the mermaid in leather boots. Someone's wife that he never.
Who looks like the preacher decked out in leather? I'll even be a priestly vibrator.
Welcome back, Leather Ties, part of After Hours, KPFT 90.1. We are having a fundraiser money drive, so call us and give us your money because we need to stay on the air.
Lots of it, lots of it.
Yeah.
Dig deep. We don't want to hear coins, we want to hear that paper rattling.
Tonight on Leather Ties, I've been turned the mic over to Master Buzz to talk about the differences and similarities between leather, kink, fetish, and vent, and hopefully cause some aggravation and discussion.
Oh, yes.
And offend.
And, oh, yes, and offend people, yes.
Basically, it's just more to, let's put the argument out there and see if we can start a discussion.
Exactly. I like offending people. When they're offended, they talk to each other.
Yeah, during the music break, we were talking about the Hanky Code and how incredibly stupid it has gotten.
Oh, no kidding.
I mean, the Hanky Code's like 30 or 40 hankies now. It's just ridiculous.
It used to be a secret code amongst gay men.
Yeah. And there were only like 8 or 9 of them, and that was it.
And it was a secret
code. And now all of a sudden they've got like purple and green. Purple with green dots means this, and blue with teal stripes means that. Oh, give me a break with this
gold
crap.
Lame, silver lame.
Well, no, gold lame. But gold lame and silver lame, that was around in the 70s.
Mosquito netting,
yeah. What do you...
Camo.
Well, I'm seeing several different ones here.
Boy bottoms.
Yeah, it's just... Yeah.
There are a bunch.
They got everything from black to white to lavender, fuchsia, coral.
Lavender, drag queens, yeah.
Okay, originally it was white meant anything, anywhere, anytime if worn on the left, and on the right it meant nothing now.
No, that's orange hanky.
Now it is.
Now
yeah,
it
that's
is.
The originally, orange hanky.
That is the orange hanky now. Right. Originally
the
that
white
was white.
One, the white one now is masturbation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Originally it was white, black, red, yellow, and blue. That was it.
Now they have five colors.
Now they have black, gray, navy blue, medium blue, light blue, red, dark pink, light pink, yellow, pale yellow, green, light green,
teal,
mustard, brown, beige, orange, rust, coral, fuchsia, lavender, and white.
And herringbone.
Wait, now they also have herringbone, then they got all the zebra stripes, the polka dots. If you wear a fur swatch, you know, they've got all kinds of crap.
I actually got one out of D.C. one time that actually had camo.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Military fetish.
Military, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, there was a long list.
The list has gone to, like, I really want to say 40. Last time I looked at that list, it's just gotten absolutely ridiculous.
It's getting longer and longer.
Well, it's like, you know, if it's white with red polka dots, that means you're into Asians. I mean, what the hell is that?
a cocktail napkin means you're into bartenders.
Now, what?
I haven't heard that. If you do cocktail napkin,
if you're wearing a cocktail napkin, that means you have a bartender fetish. You want to buff your bartender instead of tip him.
Now, my confusion is when you're in a dark bar, how do you know the difference between Robin's Egg Blue and Baby Blue?
No, it's Robin's Egg.
That's a very good question.
You have to get
Robin's
really close.
Robin's Egg and Medium are hard to tell in the dark.
Yeah.
Yeah, but still. Yeah.
Well, you'd have to be right up on
the
rear end.
No, my personal favorite is they have yellow and pale yellow.
Yes.
Now, we know that yellow means water sports. Pale yellow means spit. So, and you can never find a true yellow hanky. You only find the pale yellow ones. And I always see these people walking around with pale yellow ones, and I go up and I'll just spit on their shoes or something. Like, what are you doing? It's like, well, you're wearing pale yellow. That means you're into spit.
Yeah.
Well, no, this is yellow. It means I'm into water sports. No, that's pale yellow, baby. Look at your colors.
Well, then pee your spit off their shoe.
Yeah. Next time I'll do that. Yeah. I'll pee my spit off their shoe.
Well,
there.
Let me wash that off.
You got to spit shine, baby. You got to spit shine.
With a nice gloss over it.
Anyway, before we go any further, I know in the last segment I may have angered some people unintentionally in discussing the history of NLA. I want people who are members of NLA to know that I know and appreciate the growth and evolution of the organization. I celebrate the fact that NLA Houston presented for the first time in 10 years a leather conference, and my understanding was that it was very successful. My congratulations to you all. You all deserve it.
It was an incredible conference. We had a blast. And speaking of earned leather, Baby Bear bought me a piece of leather. That was hot. I was going to wear it tonight, but it's too damn muggy out. But yeah, it's a really hot piece.
That was one of the advantages to being born and raised in Seattle, Washington.
It's always cold there. You can always go in full leather. I began
my leather journey in a place where you could wear it year-round.
Yeah. Unfortunately,
I haven't had anybody give me any leather in a long time.
I'll give you some when I got home. I got the floggers in the car, baby.
I don't think so.
I'll give you some leather.
Every piece of leather that my slave Kirby wears, I purchased for him. And as a matter of fact, if Daddy Bob is listening, I really doubt it that you'd be up this late. But if you are, I want to thank you.
Well, it's Saturday night. Daddy Bob probably just got off work from Blackhawk, so he might be on his drive home. If
Daddy
you're listening,
Bob won't
we
sell,
love you.
Daddy Bob won't sell Kirby any leather.
Yeah, I know.
Unless he has a note from me.
I know. But he can still buy gun oil.
Yes.
We love that lube. That's the best stuff on the planet.
Because Daddy Bob knows that I'm old school. And
old school, yes.
Old school.
Please, you
chicken at old school.
Yeah, we
are. Oh, don't even go there.
Yeah, did you eat chicken tonight? What?
Old farts are the kind that need to be beat out of the foam cushions.
Ooh.
Oh, boo.
Boo. You had to go there, didn't you? Thank you, Clayton. Thank you.
Yes, thank you for the...
He was the one who went there. I left.
Now, you're the one that called him an old fart. You know he's going to come with a fart joke. He's got to come back with a fart joke on that.
Oh, I love fart jokes.
He's way Bart Simpson on that. You leave him wide open, he'll take it. He will take it. Thank goodness he didn't go like Stan or Kenny or somebody, some South Park.
Don't even mention it. You're going to make him come up with it. So
yeah.
Understanding the difference between leather and kink. Understand that there are groups that exist, even here in Houston, that celebrate the differences and celebrate their own culture and focus on their own culture. One in particular, a kink organization that I celebrate very highly and I love these people, WIPS. I absolutely love these people. They do wonderful work in the community, and they are great, great individuals. They do not profess to be anything but kink people, and I love them for it. They're very true to themselves.
Well, I think also the people who put on Sinfest.
Yes.
They're incredible, and they're very honest. We're not leather. We're kink. We're fetish. We are play. We're all about having a good time.
And you were supposed to be here with us tonight, but you're not.
Well, no. That is because it's Mother's Day weekend, and they had made some plans and forgot about the radio show. So they're going to be... Sinfest will be on next month.
Having a wonderful time. Wish you were here.
Yes. And so back to the topic of the night, which is the differences and similarities and between leather and kink. We left to listen to some funky fag music, talking about slave gear and what collars are and why never to touch one.
Right.
So let's go back to that and politely discuss what a collar is.
Originally in leather culture, the color of leather you wore, the type of leather you wore, the gear that you wore, said who you are.
Signified your place in
and the only people
world.
Who actually knew this code of who wore what and in what colors were people who were part of leather culture. For instance, it was forbidden for a slave to wear black leather.
They could only wear brown leather.
A slave wore a harness in brown leather, a cap in brown leather. They were not permitted to wear black. Only masters wore black leather. Now, understand also, in early leather culture, there was no such thing as a daddy. It was master and slave.
That was all there was.
Boy was a name that a master would call his slave by. It's like, boy, come here. Boy, do this. Because saying slave all the time is... That SL thing.
Especially after a few cocktails.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Boy falls out a whole lot easier. Daddy and boy were actually part of what I'm talking about, part of the blending of the cultures.
Well, I was going to say that coming into this in the 80s, Dom's masters would... When they wanted their subs' attention, their slaves' attention, they called them boy. It was a term of affection.
Right.
And in private, if you were with a close-knit of group that you considered your family, just not out in public, you know, you followed public protocol. But if you were out in public at a bar and you were sitting around and everybody, and we were just talking and having a good time, I know slaves that would actually call their master, Daddy, may I? And Daddy was a term of affection. It was a term of endearment. Some masters allowed this. Others did not. And I know of two in particular that actually knocked their slave off the chair for calling them that because they heard another slave do it, and they thought it would be sweet to call their master this, and they didn't get permission to do it first. But I think that's where, with masters, you know, signaling their slave by calling them boy, come here, I think that's kind of...
Where the daddy part came
in? The daddy boy thing kind of germinated from. That planted the seed for the concept of what a boy is and what we consider a leather boy as opposed to a leather slave. And it just kind of grew from there. There are boys, they're going to be daddies.
Okay, I'm going to read another excerpt. And this is from a piece that I wrote.
Oh, wait. Let's go back to the collar. The whole thing.
I'm
going to
get there.
Okay.
I promise. Okay, this is concerning exactly what you were talking about. Terminology changed as these kink persons began to desire a piece of the danger pie but found the extremes of leather culture beyond their ken.
Danger pie.
Master became daddy for those who wanted leather light, and slave became boy. In original leather culture, a master would address his slave as boy in getting his attention, and this term felt far more warm and fuzzy than slave. In accommodating kink people, even the word boy had to be updated to affect inclusion. A female boy became a B-O-I. Here we go again. Same pronunciation, but let's not offend the gods by spelling it the same way.
Yeah. Well, I know some females that are what we
That's not just in leather and kink culture either. That's in mainstream culture.
But it's what we would call old school. I know females that go by B-O-I. Because they identify as a masculine.
I do too.
But I also know females that are very feminine. They hate the word boy, B-O-Y or B-O-I. They prefer girl.
And I know male persons, not kink, not leather, who like to be called boy, B-O-I, and that is a significator of...
Circuit boy.
Yeah, well, yeah.
To me, when I see any male using B-O-I, that basically means you're a circuit boy, you're a sex whore.
party okay. boy.
You're a party boy.
Right.
B-O-I, and if you're not a female, you should not use B-O-I. To me, any male that uses B-O-I, that you're just a player. You're a circuit boy, partying, having a good time.
If
and
you're a goy, that's okay.
Well, no, if you're a goyum, that's okay.
No, Goya.
Goya, whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, I love her. She was a great artist. Go on.
No, I'm talking
Going
Yiddish.
Back to what you wear and what it signifies.
My Yiddish just got blown all apart there, so.
Okay.
Goya is single. Goyim is collective.
Yes. Goyim are okay.
Yeah. I'm Goyim.
If he's got more than one, that's cool.
I'm a Goya.
Yeah.
I wrote a piece some time ago, and I use it as a guide, a handout when I do presentations on this subject, and it's titled The Mystery and Sanctity of the Collar.
I have read this. I do like this.
Do we really have time?
Well, not to read the whole thing. Let's read some excerpts. Let's get to the meat and bones of it.
The collar that is bestowed by a master upon a slave in the leather world of modern day represents an ownership by agreement. The tribe does not depend for its very existence on the transfer of status, wealth, and assets. No enemies have been vanquished. The slave is not earning the way to freedom, nor has the slave been convicted of some horrible wrong and been sentenced to make restitution in service. The leather slave of today has chosen the slave craft as a vocation and a master as a mentor. The master of today need not be a surly, brash overlord, though some prefer to appear so, but is a willing partner in an exchange of power. Now, I will paraphrase a great deal of what I've written into this, although I think it's worded rather well. That collar signifies ownership. That's like the keys to the kingdom.
Like a chastity belt.
A slave wearing a collar is property. That is somebody's property. That collar does not belong to that slave. That collar belongs to the slave's master, the man who has the key to that lock. It should be considered entirely inappropriate to touch a slave's collar without permission from the man who owns it.
Yeah, and I know some slaves who have broken fingers yanking hands off, so yeah.
Do we know where this origin came from?
Yes.
Yes.
It stems back to going all the way back to ancient Greece and ancient Rome and before that.
Yes.
It goes to also having pet dogs. Because that's the same. That's also the same.
Yeah, you can, but
they're on a leash and a collar.
I actually property. Wrote that into this as well.
Yeah, that means they are property. You,
right.
Ritualistically, in pet ownership, you should not be touching somebody's dog that is collared and on a leash.
Right.
And it's the same thing, basically, in the leather community, too.
Here we go.
Not that he's calling leather slaves or subs dogs, because some of them are actually kind of cute.
Yeah, and some are,
no,
some are puppies. Some are puppies, and we love them, too.
Oh, IPTC was great, too.
In what could be arguably less civilized, the early Romans enslaved captured enemies as well as citizens found guilty of sedition and criminals. Those unfortunate enough to have been enslaved in this way wore some kind of collar affixed so that it could not be removed by the slave. In such times, a female slave could work her way up a devised system to be elevated to the position of concubine, but never be freed. She would be the property of the master who owned her for the duration of her life. A male slave who was fit, however, was likely to be assigned to hard labor or to Caesar's army, where he would serve and likely die. Those who did not die were given the opportunity to perform for Caesar in the Colosseum in battles to the death with others of their kind or with wild predators. Having elevated themselves to the status of gladiator, successful performances and behavior deemed suitable could earn them the freedom to become citizens. Now, the history of the collar. In early leather culture, we had masters and slaves. The collar was devised as locking your property.
It was a way to signify, this is my property, do not touch.
It's like getting out of your car and locking the door. You're locking the property. That slave is somebody's property, as is the collar that signifies it. You should neither touch nor engage either one without the owner's permission. It's like taking the keys to my brand new Maserati while I'm not looking and taking it for a test drive.
Mm.
You come back, I'm going to kill your ass.
Mm.
You don't take my property without my permission. Somebody actually walked up at a Louis. At a Louis, walked up to my collared slave and said, boy, get me a beer. Luckily enough, my boy is well-trained enough and smart enough and has balls enough that he turned around and said, your key fit this lock? Well, no. Then get it yourself.
Yep.
My slave is my slave, not yours. That collar does not mean that that slave is anybody's slave. That slave is my slave. I have committed myself to the care and feeding of that slave. That slave, in exchange, has agreed to take care of me, to serve me, not you. That collar does not mean that my slave is property of the community. That slave is property of the man who owns the key to the lock.
But again, I think this is where part of the two cultures have blurred, because in the yes. fetish world and in the kink world, a collar means that you're a bottom looking to play.
Exactly.
And I think that's part of the problem.
Yes.
Is in those cultures, if somebody's wearing a collar, that means you're a bottom and you want to play.
Mm-hmm.
So you get somebody who lives in the kink world or the fetish world come into a true leather environment, and they automatically assume they see somebody wearing a collar that they can order them around. Because you can do that in a dungeon party or a play party.
Well, not necessarily.
Well, I'm saying in those worlds.
But it is far more acceptable to see a sub wearing a collar at a fetish event or a kink event. It is far more acceptable to say, you, do this, and expect to be obeyed. In leather culture, that does not happen. Well, unfortunately, now it does, and it causes so much conflict. And the conflict is created by each of these cultures failing to respect the identity of the other. I want to make this very, very clear before we are finished. I do not have a problem with kink people at all. I'm a leather man. I do not have a problem with kink people. There are some of my dearest friends are kink people. And I celebrate that culture and its necessity. It is a necessary culture. It serves so many, and it needs to exist to serve the people who are looking for that. Leather culture needs to be respected as an individual and sovereign culture as well. If we can share space while respecting the differences between us, then we can be successful. If not, then each of our cultures is going to suffer in the blurring of the boundaries, the blurring of our own traditions and rules.
Okay. Where that's caught.
Let's go to a station identification and we'll get back to this.
You're listening to Pacifica Radio, listener sponsored, KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 Galveston, and as always, www.kpft.org.
Yay, thank you, Wes. So, Clayton, you were going to say.
I forgot now.
Oh.
Go ahead and go back to what you were saying. I'll all of a sudden bring my brain to it.
Did I derail your train of thought?
No, it derailed me having to do the station identification. So.
We had to
go
do
ahead,
some station ID.
Do what you were talking about, and then it'll make me remember.
Some of the things that we have in common are the power exchange. And unfortunately, people outside the culture don't understand what we mean when we say power exchange, and there are far too few within the culture who are willing to take the time and sit these people down and instruct them, to mentor them on what these things mean.
Okay, so give us a definition or an example of what do you mean by power exchange?
The power exchange is exactly that, an exchange. Anyone who attempts to convince you that the power exchange means you give me power over you and I accept power over you, that's the exchange. Anyone who says that is likely dangerous, if not physically, most certainly emotionally. With power comes responsibility, and in accepting responsibility, one gains power.
That is so scandally.
Responsibility?
Yes, responsibility.
As enigmatic as this statement seems, it is the very nature of the exchange of power between a master and a slave. Accepting and agreeing to live in the very nature of the conflict and necessity of opposites, both accept responsibility for their respective roles and are therefore empowered. A slave submits, offering service and obedience. Such an offer is a brave and powerful one. It is in service and obedience that the slave earns the right to receive and continue to wear master's collar. In accepting the responsibility inherent in such service and obedience, the slave is mysteriously empowered, providing that master is responsible in accepting and honoring the gift. When master accepts this gift, master does so with the knowledge that no possession is worth owning that is not worth caring for. In placing a collar around a slave's neck, signifying ownership, master accepts the responsibility to look after the slave and to see to his physical and emotional needs, as well as to protect, nurture, and train him. In responsibly accepting the gift of slave submission and service, master is empowered. The collar is a powerful, enigmatic, and sacred symbol of a deep and mysterious bond. Beyond all the other trappings, significators, and accoutrements we don in our leather lives, none is more sacrosanct than a master's collar. It is the one most recognizable symbol of commitment in the lives of masters and slaves, a commitment to continual honest communication, devotion, dedication, and the negotiated exchange of power.
And that's one thing I really, really need to stress, is that if somebody's wearing a collar, yes, they're somebody's property, but it is an equal exchange. You are giving and you are getting the same.
You are
getting what you need and you are giving what they need.
It's funny, the way I put it is in mainstream relationships, in vanilla, as we call them, vanilla relationships, we talk about how there's an equity in the relationship, that it's 50-50.
No.
Well, we come to equity through inequity. There is a definite dominant and a definite submissive role, and they seem to be unequal, except that in the commitment and the responsibility involved, both are taking an equal part in supporting this relationship.
Right. And let's put it, another way to put it is, In leather couples, I guess you would say, just for lack of using a generic term, you have a master and a slave. That entire contract, and it is literally a contract on paper with everything spelled out.
It should be signed by both people.
Yes, as well as witnesses, respected witnesses in the community. We're saving ourselves about $40,000 in psychology bills because we're already sitting down and communicating and talking it out and writing it on paper saying, this is what I need, this is what I don't want, this is what I can give, this is what I can't give, and working from there. Where so many of in the vanilla world, there is no communication until they end up in divorce court or at a psychologist's office, and these people get paid, you know, millions of dollars a year to try to tell people, hey, talk to each other, you know?
Slave Kirby and I negotiated for 6 months before his collar went on, and something that
Actually, that was 6 months, and then he got a trial collar, if I remember correctly.
Right. I do a presentation called Negotiating the Contract, and one of the things that I say is the negotiation doesn't stop when the ink dries. The negotiation is constant.
It's constant. It's day to day.
It's a living contract.
Yeah. Yes. There are days I know that Kirby has come home and he said, sir, fix your own damn dinner. and you say, no. And he'll say, oh, all right. But I also know that there are days...
No, he doesn't put it that way.
No, I know he doesn't put it that way. I'm giving you... I'm
he
just
wouldn't
giving you
dare.
The short end of the stick there. But there, I also know that there are days when he comes home and you can just look at him when he comes home from work and you say, boy, go to bed and relax. Go to bed, go to sleep.
Sit down, I'm cooking.
Yeah. I know that there are days like that.
And so, in that, I still am in control. I am still master. I'm still giving the orders. Okay, I may be doing the dishes, but that's because I ordered him to sit down. I will do the dishes.
Thank you. Exactly. You've got to be able to respect the other person. And that works both ways. That doesn't mean you're getting a lapdog to wait on your hand and foot.
And a lot of people don't remember that when they do a contract even.
Right.
And they forget
to
do those
stupid
things.
Little things like who does the dishes, who does the cooking, stuff like that in a contract. I mean, that's stuff that, okay, this is your primary responsibility, but I understand that if you get home from work and you're absolutely wiped, I should be man enough and master enough to say, no, you need to sit down and relax. Let me take care of this time.
If my boy comes home, if my slave comes home exhausted, and I order him to stand on his feet and cook me dinner, I'm not meeting my responsibility, because part of my responsibility is see to his health.
Yeah,
if he's already exhausted, I'm not doing him any good by forcing him to work harder.
Right. Okay, one thing I want to do, we need to wrap this up and we're going to get to roundtable. We're going to, Chris, I want to hit a couple of songs and then we'll go to roundtable. We're going to play two more songs that are some really fun, funky fag music. I think I brought some Jimmy Somerville.
That's cool.
Probably stuff y'all have never heard before. And it's from an album he did called Manage the Damage. And then I think there's one other, I think that's what? We're going to do Army of Lovers, Let the Parade. Do C.B. Melton. I like C.B. Melton.
Okay.
C.B. Melton is also an openly gay artist from Belgium, and his lover is from Spain, and God, they're a hot couple.
Amazing.
But
something from Belgium.
I
have one more point I'd like to make.
Well, Jimmy Somerville's from London. I want you to wrap up Leather, well, I don't want to say verses, but Leather and Kink and the differences and the similarities and how we can stay separate but equal and appreciate each other. Tell me. In less than 2 minutes.
In less than 2 minutes. Oh, how do I put this succinctly? I mean, I've got pages of stuff that I've written on this. How to put it succinctly? The first thing you need to do is to know your own culture, look into the history of your own culture, respect the rules of your own culture, and respect the differences between yours and someone else's. There are some very strong similarities. Leather people who practice kink, practice kink. People who practice kink and wear leather as a fetish, wear leather as a fetish. We can respect those differences and those similarities without losing our own identity.
That's what I was trying to bring up before, was that was what my statement was about leather people having...
And trust
kinks
me, people,
on top
if
of
you
that.
If you're out at the neighborhood leather bar here in Houston, it would be the Ripcord. If you're out at the Ripcord and you see somebody dragging some half naked person around with a collar around their neck, dragging them around by a leash, those are not leather people. Those are performance artists. That is not what leather is about. I don't drag my slave around on a leash.
So when
those
it comes down to
performing for you.
So if we could sum it up in one word, I would just say respect.
Yes, respect,
we need to
respect for yourself. And if you respect yourself, you cannot help but respect others. If you respect others, they cannot help but respect you.
And thank you for listening to Leather Ties. We're going to play some funky fag music, and we're going to come back with Roundtable.
Spinning round and round, I love it what you do when you are going down. It's so
We are back. This is After Hours. And we need for you to call in your pledge of support at 713-526-5738. 713-JAM-KPFT. Or you can go to kpft.org and place your pledge of support there safely and securely. Remember a couple things that we like to promo differently here on our show. There is the Cocktails for KPFT pledge. Give up one cocktail for us a month. That's $5. Comes to $60 for the entire year. And that pledge of support goes to our show. Also, we have the Queer is a $3 Bill pledge. That's $3 a month, $36 for the entire year. That's a cutesy little way of letting management know that there's homosexuals listening to our show. So at 713-526-5738, 713-JAM-KPFT, or kpft.org. Not sure who we need to thank for our pledges out there. We had it switched over to the phones, to the service, so hopefully we did get some calls, and we'll find out later on this week. So it's time for Roundtable, boys and girls.
Yay! Yay!
Let's start off.
Oh, him.
Yeah. The Catholic priest sex scandal.
I want to read this.
Yeah, okay.
I want to become a priest now.
Oh, wow.
This sick and perverted Catholic priest.
I love the headline. It says, "The Father Cutie Scandal, Sex and the Single Priest."
As opposed to what? The polygamous priest?
Well, I want to know if that cutie at the end is valid or not, actually.
Did you see his picture in here?
He's actually cute.
He is.
He is cute.
He's sharp.
You know, for a Catholic.
Oh, very.
It's Cuban-American Catholic Father Alberto Cuti. It's spelled cutie, but there's an accent over the E.
I just want to call him cutie.
A popular Miami Beach priest famous for his Spanish-language television and radio talk shows. He's often referred to as Father Oprah.
Are you okay over there, little bear?
Was caught
on the beach,
half naked, cavorting with a scantily clad woman.
I would have liked to have seen him all the way naked.
He was on the beach in a bathing suit. She was on the beach in the bathing suit.
Yes, but the thing is, he was with a woman.
Were they screwing on the beach?
It doesn't matter. It was a Catholic priest with a woman.
What if he was with a man? No, but that's
yeah.
The thing. was it a Catholic priest? The woman is the last person he belongs to.
Was there an altar boy convention somewhere else in the state?
There must have been, because he would have been on the beach otherwise with a man.
Sex on the beach, altering to that.
See, the bad part about it is that the photos were taken and placed in a Spanish language tabloid, TV Notas, and then with the woman wraps her legs around the father.
Isn't that the way you do it?
Father had his hand down her swimsuit.
Swimsuit?
That's not the missionary position.
Fondling her rear end.
Ooh.
Hey.
I think that would be a perfect time for your little shame thing.
I believe that's laying on of the hands.
No, he was just checking. Yes. It was, you know, cleanliness is next to godliness. It was that whole Jingleberry thing.
Oh, Robert, only you.
Now, here's the part of this that is so twisted. He's been immediately suspended from his duties. He can no longer officiate as priest, even though he does get to keep the collar, which he was not wearing on the beach.
Really?
Yeah, so basically, we see here is the Catholic priest, if you diddle a woman, you're suspended. You diddle a boy, you get a transfer.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
If he wasn't wearing his collar, how did they know he was a priest? Did he have a rosary hanging out of his ass?
Because he really is very famous.
Oh, okay.
He's very well known.
And how do we know he wasn't wearing his collar? It was just lower.
Right.
He had it around his neck.
He was wearing a ring.
Is that like a cock ring?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm assuming you can tighten it.
That's what I was inferring, but you had to go and say it.
Well, you know, might as well be it.
But, the, you know,
say it as... The
interesting part is, you know, as I said, he was suspended for this, and there's two types of protests already forming up. They're saying, you know, the progressive part of the Catholics, all four of them. Well, actually, I'm sorry, it's the lay ministry, so there's actually more of them. Are saying, you know, this is why we should allow priests to get married and have sex, so they're not caught
diddling on the beach.
Yeah,
right.
And then there's the one who, you know, shame, shame. It's like. Like I said, I want to tell him. You know.
But all he has to do is go and confess, and he'll be okay.
Of course. But so right now
he'll be saved.
That's kind of changing the word shame. I want to burn forever.
I was going to say, what is this, Champagne King, Evelyn Champagne King? What are we doing here? Shame. Oh, okay. It's an old disco song from the 70s.
Okay, his name is
some
pronounced.
I haven't heard that one yet. Well, some of us are young enough and can actually get the reference.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay. His name is pronounced Coutier, even though it's spelled cutie.
That's why it's got the extensor sobre la E. Coutier.
In fact, some smitten Catholic schoolgirls often nicknamed him Father What a Waste.
Obviously, it's not.
Is that because she found his waste?
Probably.
So that means he's one of the one or two heterosexual priests?
That's an unfair assumption, but I like it.
The bad ones have to come out of the woodwork.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Look at that hair. Look at how that comes up to
him. I know, he's got... you look at this picture of him, he kind of looks like Pugsley Adams with that hair flip on the front there.
He's got a little ski slope at the end.
Pugsley Adams hair flip up the front.
Looks like the guy off of Friends.
But he's...
Is that a Catholic faux hawk?
A Catholic faux hawk?
But
wow.
I just thought that was an interesting little scandal that came across.
Still blows my mind.
The latest from she chose tatas over tiaras. Carrie Prejean, almost about ready after being stripped out of her clothing, is almost about ready to be stripped out of her title as Miss California USA.
Oh, she
yes.
should be.
She, now the justification is that, you know, she signed a contract first that she can only speak when we tell her to speak. And she's going around as Miss California USA talking to the nom heads. the National Organization of Marriage.
Okay, but who really? She doesn't.
No, she's care. Actually. She's actually. Yeah. The controversy is over. She's allowing footage from the question that she was asked and her answer. She's allowing that footage to be used by like places like Focus on the Family.
Yeah.
She's allowing them to use that in their public ads.
There's part of that controversy too, the copyright from Miss California, but the fact that she's doing appearances without permission.
Right.
And then there's
scantily clothed.
Indeed. And her contract that she signed to be a part of the pageant asks, have you done any nude or semi-nude modeling? And
she checked no.
She said no, because if you said yes, then that was grounds for disqualification. So she lied.
Define semi-nude. A bikini bathing suit is semi-nude.
Yes.
Yeah, that's one of the comments they made, is the fact that her what she wore for the swimsuit portion of the contest
is defined as semi-nude.
Was more revealing than her pink panties and no top while having her back to the camera.
I still have more of a problem with her getting free boobs.
We're working on them getting for you.
Jealousy will get you nowhere.
Well, no, I'd rather have something else enlarged anyway.
But
it's not the size of the boat, it's the motion of the ocean.
It's called a vacuum pump, dear.
The bigger the ship, the smoother the ride.
Well, there is that.
I mean, that was the big thing of, you know.
That was good.
She's going out talking of the purity and, you know, the sanctity of marriage, and, you know, marriage should be between one man and a couple of bags of silicone.
Yeah, I was going to say, and this is somebody who's like half plastic.
Love your pontoons.
Any more plastic, she could become a gay icon.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
She'd finally be the Barbie girl.
After Cher finally decomposes.
Don't they already have that one chick that builds herself as Barbie?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
the
yeah.
Human Barbie doll?
Probably.
We've had the recent gay marriage, which has been sprouting out everywhere. I love John Stewart's take on this.
Uh-huh.
Did anybody see him on Thursday?
Yes.
Yes.
No.
Starts off with the house music, you know, house dance music, and goes, that can only mean one thing. It's time for Gay Watch. And it, he was focusing more on D.C., because the District of Columbia City Council voted 12-1 to allow same-sex marriage, to recognize same-sex marriage. And the one holdout was Marion Barry.
Of course.
Former mayor. And they showed him giving a speech at a rally saying that, you know, we have to be the moral compass of our people. And, you know, as leaders, we have to be moralistic in that. And then they showed the picture of Marion Barry smoking crack in a hotel room with a woman that was not his wife.
Yeah, really wonderful moral compass.
Mm. Yeah, whose morals are we talking about here?
That compass exactly. Broke.
As I think I should say this as full disclosure, Marion Barry is also a former member of the Pacifica National Board.
Oh, well.
Our parent organization.
I wish I could say
I'm
sorry about that.
I guess he doesn't like our show, does he?
Oh, you don't want to be a liar?
Well, this was in between his mayorship and his
crack deal.
No, it was after the crack deal. It was like,
after,
you know,
the crack deal.
During the revolution. But it was funny watching these ministers now talking about, you know, we're going to, and they were being polite about it in a way, and saying, you know, the people are going to start throwing these people out of office. It's interesting to see how that one's going to play, because D.C. doesn't really have any rights that they have unless Congress gives it to them. And Nancy Pelosi said, you know, we're not even going to take up the issue. Let them do what they want.
Hmm.
So that may mean a sixth area where you can quasi get married.
Well, I like what John Stewart also said, was that he said, you know, you're fighting against a minority. It's always a losing battle. And he was like, the blacks with slavery, the blacks with the right to vote, the women with the right to vote, prohibition. he lumped in prohibition.
Yeah.
But he's saying anytime you have a minority that's fighting for equal rights, you're going to lose. Just give it to them.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we're 5 years now since Massachusetts said, you know, let's have married. We're still waiting to hear the final result from the California Supreme Court. And just seeing where all this is going to snowball into, with where different jurisdictions are going to fall in that.
There are 5 states now allowing gay marriage, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Maine just became the 5th.
Maine just became 5th.
I'm thinking with 5 states, other states are going to start falling in line, especially with Iowa. Come on. Middle of America. A farming state.
Iowa, that was just a shock.
That blew me away.
I didn't believe it at first. I got to be honest. I got the news.
But other states are going to start falling in line. California has traditionally led the country in civil rights. And now they're dragging their heels.
Well, I think, honestly, the last state will probably be Utah. They'll be the last ones to...
I still think Texas will be the last one.
Texas will be the last state.
Last holdout.
Oh, no. I saw more Democratic votes this year in the presidential election, especially in Austin.
That's
I think we were all just tired of Bush.
Well, exactly. Yeah, but who doesn't get tired of that clown?
Well, it was surprising how close the margin was, because, I mean, at one point I looked up at during the election, I'm going, I think I actually had Obama a little bit ahead in Texas. I'm like, what?
Mm-hmm.
My God, the state's going to change.
That was all the early votes, and then by the time it got around to the...
Well, the Republican Party itself is going through a shakeup. I mean, recognized, prominent Republican congressmen are now jumping ship and becoming Democrats.
That's pretty funny, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think one of his, with Arlen Specter, it's because he's looking at the parties once again, because they got their back to the wall, they're trying to shift so far to the right.
No, I don't think that's it at all. I think he's just trying to save his own career.
Exactly. Well, there's that. Yeah, I mean, there was that part, too.
I mean, when you flip-flop like that, you know, they talk about everybody flip-flopping, but I'm sorry. To me, that's just a cop-out. It's a cheap flip-flop to try to get reelected.
Well, that's right. I mean, he did actually make the point of saying that, you know, part of the reason why he was doing that is he doesn't think he could win the Republican primary, but he thinks he could win a Democratic primary.
He hasn't become more liberal. He just wants to get reelected.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he just wants his paycheck.
Bingo.
You know, as far as that goes, you know, at least do have the tenacity of Lieberman, who lost in the Democratic primary and turned around and said, okay, fine, I'm going to be an independent and run that way.
Right.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
I think the fact that Specter jumped ship, whether he actually means it or is changing his views or not, it just helps to demoralize the Republican Party.
Right. Just another major blow.
One of their major voices jumped ship. That sort of demoralizes the party.
Well, you know, but there were so many topics he was kind of left on the side there because he was pro-choice. You know, he was slightly marginalized, but I think the biggest thing was, you know, the once Minnesota finally decides what they're going to do, of giving a year and a half at least, or a year to a filibuster, I mean, a Democratic ran Senate and House of Representatives, that, you know, you can't do a filibuster in the Senate.
Well, no, so, I agree with you that he shouldn't have just slipped over to Democrat. He should have just said, I'm an independent. Right. I'd have more respect for him if he had done that.
Well, I mean, at least try to make the...
But the fact that he goes, no, I'm going to be a Democrat now.
As a person who generally votes Democrat, the fact that he's a Democrat is not going to make me want to vote for him if he runs for something that... I have a choice.
But I mean, if he would have said, no, I'm not going to be a Republican or a Democrat, I want to be an independent, I'd have more respect for him. What I see him doing is just flip-flopping because and he flat out said, because I want to get reelected.
Yep.
I'm trying to remember what... Mm-hmm. See, I'm originally from Pennsylvania, but I left too early. I don't know if there is a thing where you have to... I know some states you have to... I guess you should be able to register as an independent if they require you to register your... I have to look into that.
I don't think in any of the states they can require you to register as. If you register as, it's a matter of choice. You can register as one or the other. However, once you vote in the primary, you are registered for that election with that
party. Yeah, under Texas. But I know with some states you have to register a party affiliation on some of those. I'll have to look into that one. I forget what Pennsylvania's... laws say on that stuff. Where are we?
Oh, if forced to register a party, I would register independent. That way I could vote my conscience.
Exactly. Well, that's and that's really typically how it's supposed to be done. But
Joe the Plumber has spoken out on the issue of gay marriage.
Oh, yay.
Well,
Plumber's crack.
Actually, you know, I did have one thing that I wanted to get some people's opinions on. I know we passed it up, but in the list of states that are going to fall in line in whatever order to, you know, acknowledge gay marriage and whatnot, where, I have to ask, where do you think Louisiana is going to fall in with that? I'm expecting it not to be too high in the running.
Louisiana is going to fall into the Gulf.
It already has, several times. I've been there and seen it.
It's one of those things, I think it's going to get to a point where it's going to have to get to a level where it's not the states saying that we're going to do this. It's the states are going to be told they have to recognize it.
Yes.
I think what's really going to have to happen
is Supreme Court.
It's going to have to go to the Supreme Court and the full faith and credit clause of the Constitution. And
as soon as it gets to the U.S. Supreme Court, that's going to change the entire thing.
Yep. Mm-hmm. As soon as it hits D.C., it's going
to
change everybody.
But see, the one thing we have to wait for is just because these laws are on the books, you can't argue it. You have to, it's like 2106 with the homosexual conduct here in Texas. Mm-hmm. We couldn't fight it just because it was on the books. We had to have an actual case. And then that case is what went through, and you had to argue it of why it is against the law.
And it has to fail at the state level.
Has to fail, and it has to, you know, go through all the different steps to do that. And that's what's going to have to happen, is someone's going to have to bring a case
and federal Supreme Court to do it.
And wait until after Ginsburg retires. She has announced her retirement.
Well, thank God.
She has?
Yes.
Imminent. Yeah. It's imminent, definitely.
Sutter announced his retirement.
No. Ruth Bader Ginsburg announced her retirement. She's going to finish out the session, and she's retiring.
So they've got two retiring men.
After doing a job like that for all those years.
So when did she announce that?
Last week.
No, that was David Souter who announced it.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, Souter did announce.
Well, then it's the both of them.
She announced hers just like in the last day or two.
I know I got it on the news.
They were saying on CNN that she was possibly going to, and that because they were all up in arms that Obama might actually get to appoint two justices.
Yay!
And I was like,
I know, I heard that. I was really encouraged.
Well, the basic fact of the matter is that running through the Supreme Court is not too far off.
No.
Well, the problem is this.
It's just a matter of time.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how much respect I'm actually going to have for states that will literally be pretty much, quote-unquote, forced to make that change. I mean, you know, in my opinion, it says a lot for a state to decide on to acknowledge that. And I don't know. Respect is a big thing.
The problem is this. Technically, under that standard, Maine is it. Maine is the only state that went through the legislative process and went through both houses of their legislature and the governor's office to pass the law. The other four states was state Supreme Court cases saying, hey, our Constitution says all people are created equal, and you can't discriminate against this couple because one of the members is not male or one of the members is not female. That's basically the argument we can use on any of these things, is sexual discrimination.
And even with state Supreme Court decisions going that way, what is happening now and what's happening in California, state Supreme Court says one thing and the voters said something else.
Yeah, because
they amend the Constitution in order to pass the anti-marriage laws.
Yeah, because that's basically the rules. You know, the Constitution says this, so you change the Constitution, and then now the Supreme Court is having to decide whether or not the Proposition 8 ballot was valid under the Constitution of making a constitutional amendment.
In order to declare it unconstitutional in federal law, we would have to completely strike the 14th Amendment.
Which, of course, completely outlandish.
That's not going to happen.
But, you know, and that's part of how this case is going to have to proceed through is basically someone's going to have to go to Maine or Iowa or one of the other states, get the gay marriage certificate, and go it's going to have to fight through. I mean, actually, we
more power to Maine for making not having to be the not having to be forced into.
And I think I Maine would probably be the bigger one to go through now with how they got it.
I agree somewhat in what you said that you would have no respect for a state that would actually force that issue. However, until a state forces the issue, it can never be brought to a national decision. It can never be brought to the U.S. Supreme Court. So in order for it to be brought to the U.S. Supreme Court, a state has to challenge it.
Well, I suppose that's true, but I mean, you know, at least, just I don't know, it seems like whenever a state approves that kind of thing, the people that are in charge over there are a little bit more lenient on it. They're a little bit more accepting of people.
Right, and the ones who aren't need to be brought around one way or another, and we need that challenge in order to make it U.S.-wide.
It's going to be a faster process getting it to be U.S.-wide than it is to right. get each
but
state to do it.
But that's only if the Supreme Court will review the case.
Yeah, it depends on what level it's where it's at. You know, who got the last win before it goes to the Supreme Court? Because the Supreme Court gets to decide whether or not they hear the case.
Right.
And they can also knock it back down to the state again.
The problem with the U.S. Supreme Court hearing that case, the huge problem they're going to have in actually passing something like that is that in order to do that, they would be trumping on states' rights. The right of each state to determine its own.
Well, in a way, they already have it. Well, I mean, we've got the federal law of DOMA, Defense of Marriage Act, which is the law, and they're using that as the argument of why they can't. I think what's going to have to get this is it's going to probably take till next April. Mm-hmm. It's probably what's going to help if someone gets a Maine marriage certificate and comes back to a state that has a state income tax.
And
they file jointly on the state and federal level, and when those returns get rejected, then fight that. That's probably going to be the quickest way of getting it through to fight both cases at the same time, saying, hey, look, I've got a marriage certificate. This is a certificate of matrimony issued by the state of Maine, and under the U.S. Constitution, it's supposed to be recognized.
Absolutely.
And since the federal government doesn't issue marriage certificates, this should be valid, and I should be able to take this to the IRS and say, we are a married couple. And I think that is going to be the quickest route of going through, because if not, then you're having to look at cases where...
But it would mean the repeal of DOMA. They'd have to repeal DOMA.
Well, if it just be declared that DOMA is unconstitutional.
Right.
That would be the thing.
And that hasn't been done yet.
But because it needs somewhere to... Yeah, I'm surprised I haven't been able to move that forward with some of the people who got married in California. Because was it the California couple that moved to Dallas and wanted to get a divorce, and the Texas judge said, we don't recognize this, so we don't have to.
Yeah, we don't have to hear your divorce case because you didn't get married here. You're not married here.
So,
but federal law goes over state law.
Absolutely.
So if anything in a state... doesn't agree with what the federal law is, they have to.
Right, but when it's presented to the Supreme Court, remember that the Supreme Court still has to respect states' rights to be self-determining.
Not if it goes against the Constitution.
Will be able to be overrided by the state laws.
Exactly.
Well, at this point, until it's repealed, DOMA gives each state the right to do that, though. The Defense of Marriage Act, on a federal level, gives states the right to determine for themselves whether they will or will not recognize the gay marriages in other states.
Right, that's part of it. We need someone to be able to take it to the courts to argue that DOMA violates the full faith and credit clause. You know, the argument you make for this is if you don't do something like that, then all these businesses who say their corporate headquarters are in Delaware or South Dakota because they have these great tax rates for them. If you say the full faith and credit clauses, then you have killed all of those corporations who are doing this tax haven thing, because if you're incorporated in Delaware, we have to recognize that corporation here in Texas. And so you're talking about lots of corporations having to shell out a lot of money to get reincorporated in a different state.
DOMA is the only area in which full faith and credit is challenged in the federal government at this point.
And the sad thing is all these laws can be interpreted for one little law. It can be interpreted about four different ways, and it's all on each mind's different perspective.
But then the thing is this. The Supreme Court, said before, the Supreme Court, their idea is they are supposed to think what the Founding Fathers would say.
Exactly.
Precisely.
You know, WWJD, what would Jefferson do?
Right.
And that's the thing, is that's how their mentality is supposed to be of what it is.
And in order to discover that, you really have to be familiar with the Federalist Papers.
I mean,
because those were the original drafts.
We're talking about a bunch of people who wore powdered wigs and powdered faces and tight pants. I do believe they would have been in favor of gay marriage.
I do, too.
Just seems to me that they were openly closeted, I believe is the term.
Well, they threw a wonderful tea party.
Oh, yes. I love all the teabagging jokes.
Well, you know, they should be thinking like the Founding Fathers, but I hate to keep pointing out keywords, but should be is a big issue nowadays, isn't it?
Shoulda, woulda, coulda.
Exactly.
And the downside, you know, with Souter leaving and if Ginsburg is next here, we're not changing the balance of the Supreme Court. We're still talking, you know, replacing the left-leaning judges with other left-leaning judges. It's on the Republican side, you know, the right-wingers, that once they have to start moving out.
I'm simply encouraged by the injection of new blood.
And the idea of not getting, you know, some of the talk saying there's not going to be a judge, you know, who's worked their way through, you know, through the judge. They're talking about a lesbian law school professor.
Yay! Woo.
You know, check off
I
a couple of points.
I think younger would be a better, a younger judge would be better because they would be up to date with times now, and you know they wouldn't have any of those problems that they're facing issues nowadays.
I think there's an age.
Yeah, there's a restriction
requirement. Yes,
and
well, I mean, there are also several law degree requirements as well as service requirements. You have to have been seated as a federal judge for a certain period of time.
I didn't
think
no.
Yeah.
Well, regardless, the point is we need someone that is a little bit more up to date with contemporary issues.
I mean,
I think they're all up to date. They just have very staunch opinions.
I think we reach back into our history, and it's happened once before. And I don't know about the judgeship requirements there, but I think it's time we pull the Taft, where we take a former president and put him on the Supreme Court.
Clinton.
Oh, don't tell me we need to start pruning the Supreme Court.
Well, huh?
Please, no
blue
shrubbery
dress
in the Supreme Court.
No, not Bush.
Blue
I'm
dresses.
Talking Clinton.
Oh. Blue dresses.
No.
Could you imagine the conversations about porn movies he could have with Clarence Thomas?
Yes, I can imagine, but I don't want to.
But then again, they're also talking about Hillary being possible.
That I'd buy. But I wouldn't want to take her out of her current post. I think she's doing a bang-up job.
Well, the one,
I think she is, too.
Yeah, the one problem they're said about that is if she goes into... If she was to take something like that, she has to stop all of her ambitions of wanting to be president. Hmm. You know, because you're taking a lifetime appointment.
Right.
So...
I have to say it the way Kirby said it the other night. I just love the way it rolls off my tongue when I say Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. I love the way that sounds rolling off my tongue.
And it's weird the way with how it's actually going so well there. I saw a news article saying, Secretary Clinton cried and nobody cared. Woman being able to show emotion.
Exactly.
Without, you know, well, some sort of emotion aside.
Does that mean we can have a female president then?
We almost did.
We almost did.
Came very close.
Well, it was a long time ago before...
Hey, come on, one first at a time.
Well, either way we went in the last one, it was going to be a first either way we went, and so...
But now
and so far, we've done something new, and it's actually working out pretty well right now.
Yep.
Unfortunately, there are still people that are stuck back in the Dark Ages that wouldn't agree with you on that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any of them are in this room right now.
Yeah.
I didn't think so.
I want to rewind just a little bit when we were talking about filing tax returns
right. With
gay marriage. I found this article that I read this morning from Yahoo about the Massachusetts couples that married 5 years ago. And there's a couple here, Michael and Rick McManus of Charlton. They married in 2006. They honeymooned in Panama, blah, blah, blah. they adopted a son and a daughter, and they plan on, they're saying that within Massachusetts, they said having been married has been a big plus, for example, with dealing with state adoption officials. But
that brings in another issue altogether.
Mm-hmm. But they're frustrated at having to file two sets of tax returns at an extra cost as a married couple in Massachusetts and as single men for the IRS.
The federal government is acknowledging.
And they were dismayed when Arkansas's voters last fall approved a ballot measure banning gay couples from adopting.
Well, one of the parts they also say in here is that...
And they even say right here, prior to this, even the 2010 census, under the prevailing federal Defense of Marriage Act, likely won't record legally wed couples in Massachusetts and elsewhere as married.
See, also they show a part in here about where, of how the federal government is looking at this. When they came back from Panama, they went to the immigration booth. They had to go through separately because the federal law wouldn't recognize them as a couple. So they go through as two individuals instead of a family. And they're talking about limiting their international travel because they don't want to have to explain in front of their adopted children that daddy and daddy are not married.
Yeah.
In the eyes of the federal government.
And this whole article talks about several different couples.
So were the children picked up in Panama, or were the...
No. The children were adopted in Massachusetts.
Okay.
And
they went on a family trip to Panama.
Okay.
And when they came back, they had to go through separately.
No, it was on their honeymoon.
Oh, yeah, their honeymoon, they went to Panama. When they came back, they had to go through separately.
They wanted to travel internationally, but, you know, when they come back... As a family, immigration is going to separate them coming back through because they're not considered under federal law a family, yeah. A married couple.
So they're gonna limit their international travel until federal policy changes.
Well, these are going to be the brave people, some of the pioneers, the people who are actually going to create the challenge that we need in order to get these things changed.
So, I mean, that right there is a perfect example of where we need to start moving towards in order to get that change made.
Having been one of those pioneers when I was a teenager, I don't envy them their position.
Yeah.
I was one of the first gay foster children in the country to be knowingly placed in an openly gay foster home, and that was back in 1973. And it threw me whether I wanted to go headlong into civil politics because I became the example, the challenge. And like I say, having been there, I don't envy them. But yes, we need people like that who are willing to do it.
Yeah. I mean, all those people that got married in Massachusetts 5 years ago are setting the precedent for us now.
Exactly.
And, I mean, there was another part of the article that talked about the Roman Catholic Church pulling out of their adoption proceedings there in Massachusetts because of all of this. And I mean, it's a really good article. I mean, if you can go on Yahoo, you'll find it. It's a...
Can we get them to pull their way all the way back to the Vatican?
Well, I wish we could, but I mean, it's a great article. It talks about a lot of different things about the goods, the bads, the uglies of all of it, and a lot of the precedents that have been made so far.
But the priest can do altar boys, but they won't allow adoption.
Yeah.
Okay.
I heard the most interesting term the other night watching a PBS show about the difference between theism, polytheism, atheism, and a new term that I think fits me, anti-theism.
I like that word.
I'm an anti-theist. Isn't that a wonderful term?
Yeah.
I love that. And the way they describe it, the guy described it, he says, I'm not going to make any apologies for it. I am against religion. I'm against the idea of God. He says, I'm an anti-theist.
I've always used
it. As you may or may not be, you cannot deny that over the years, religion hasn't exactly helped us more than it has hurt us.
Yeah.
I will quote from the Da Vinci Code when I say that as long as there has been one God, there has been killing in his name.
Exactly. That's the problem.
I usually just use the phrase, you know, I leave organized religion and organized crime to the Italians.
Religion is an institution, and I have no need of being institutionalized.
One final story I want to put up
So you quote from the Da Vinci Code.
So do you pretty much read everything that Oprah tells you to read, or?
Ooh.
Ooh.
Oh. Oh. Someone ain't going to see a Sweet 17 party.
Uh-uh. I'll tell you what. Oprah will never suggest that you read my book, but I'll suggest it.
I would love to.
It'll scare the hell out of you.
A college student has been suspended from his Christian college in Western Philadelphia, Western Pennsylvania, because thing is, okay, I'll start over here. A student from Philadelphia who appeared in a gay porn video using a pseudonym is appealing his suspension from a Christian college in Western Pennsylvania, saying the off-campus job wasn't school's business. John Getcher, 22, said he needed the income to pay for school, but was suspended for 1 year from Grove City College, pending his appeal, after a student saw him in a video posted online. I absolutely believe the college violated my rights. They suspended me based on my occupation. I wasn't doing anything illegal. He was a model for Randy Blue videos.
Who in the world's Randy Blue?
That's a website.
It's porn.
Oh, okay.
It's an adult porn, gay porn site.
I guess that shows how much I go on.
The question is, had he signed a morals clause in order to attend that college?
They don't mention anything about that. College spokesperson said he was suspended because he exhibited behavior contrary to the values of the college. He's a senior now, majoring in molecular biology. He told this newspaper he'd been about 15 scenes in the last 2 years using the screen name Vincent DeSalvo.
So, okay.
As far as I'm concerned, if he was not forced to sign some sort of a morals clause in order to be a student in that college, then what he does in his off-campus time is his business. And whether he agrees with their moral turpitude or not, he is a senior at that college. They've gotten a hell of a lot of money from him. What do they want now? His soul?
Probably.
They're Christians. What else do you think they've been after for the last...
Hey, you can't have my soul. I'm saving my soul. Use it on the weekends.
Well, I've seen some of the videos. His soul was probably the last thing he was saving.
No, but anyway. The audacity of a school attempting to have any say over what you do in your free time is ridiculous.
I don't let my employer do it. I'll be damned if I'll have the school.
No, this isn't the first time we've seen this thing where a couple of wrestlers for the University of Nebraska who did solo films without contact with other men were kicked off of the teams, off of the wrestling team in Nebraska. One went off to another school and was almost the NCAA wrestling champion at some other school because they didn't care the fact that he did what you normally do. You know, he could have done the same. He could have done the same thing and just gone to a sperm bank. But you know, you get a lot more money out of that deposit.
Right. Yeah.
We're coming up to the top of the hour. It's time for us to say goodbye.
Bye.
You've been listening to After Hours Square Radio with Attitude and listener sponsored commercial free Pacific Radio for the Gulf Coast, KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 Galveston, and always the World Wide Web at kpft.org. Your last chance to call in and pledge of support at 713-526-5738, 713-JAM-KPFT. And coming up here in just a moment, Zydeco Pas Salé. If you didn't contribute to us, give them a jingle and do that. We'll be back next week. Who knows with what, but we'll have Jimmy. God help us.
Oh, well. Bye. Have a great night, everyone.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.